is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon. Welcome, everybody. It's a Monday afternoon. It's a rough Monday after a terrible Sunday, but we're here till 3. John Murphy, Donald Jones with the John Murphy Show till 3 p.m. today. Good afternoon, Donald. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm tired. You know, got home around, I think we landed around 2:30.
Really?
In the morning. Got home around 3:30 and slept for a good solid 3.5 hours. So.
Did you sleep on a plane?
No, I couldn't. I tried. Maybe 20 minutes. I watched two movies. One good one. You'd like Chuck, about Chuck Wepner. Remember him, the boxer from Bayonne,
New Jersey? I didn't know
that
they had a movie. Is it like a documentary? Is it a?
No. It's Liev Schreiber. You know him? Great actor. Mm-hmm. He plays Chuck Wepner, and it's all about his fight against Muhammad Ali and then how they based the movie Rocky after him. Really good movie. I enjoyed it immensely.
I wonder if I can get it on my Fire Stick.
I bet you can. Chuck. I think it just came out a year or so ago.
And what was the other one? That one was bad?
It was bad. That's the one that put me to sleep.
I don't know how you – okay. I sleep on every flight.
Really?
Literally every flight. Like, I fly from here to Jersey, which is like 45 minutes. I'm asleep on the flight.
Good for you,
man. I can't. I purposely stay up and not get any rest the day before so that I can sleep on the flight. I hate being up on flights. I get, like – claustrophobic, and I start to lose my mind.
Well, it's like a 4.5 hour flight last night, and I probably had an hour and a half of work to do, so that took care of a good chunk of it.
You know, when I went to Australia some years back, it was, you know, 5 hours to L.A., and then it was like 17 hours to Australia straight, and I swear I almost lost my mind on that flight. Because I slept, you know, you're not getting solid sleep on flights, you know, and I slept for, 8 hours of it, and the rest of it I was up, and it was just like, there's not enough movies in the world to get you through that flight.
I know. Do you notice how we're killing time here before we have to address the elephant in the room? The elephant is right over there, the elephant in the room.
It is.
Oh, my goodness, Donald. I didn't, you know, third straight week I can say this. I didn't see it coming. And I didn't see it coming. And I could never imagine the Bills could lose, a game like that. Obviously, when there's a lopsided score like that, I learned this from the great Marv Levy. Typically, there are turnovers involved. Certainly, there were turnovers involved in yesterday's loss. 5 first-half interceptions, never seen anything like that. And, you know, the other elephant in the room is the quarterback decision, which, you know, obviously, Sean McDermott, we talked about it all last week. He called it a calculated risk. You know, it was a gamble. We talked about that as late as Friday. Mm-hmm. Opened the play-by-play broadcast yesterday talking about the gamble, how risky it was. Understood why he did it, and we talk about that too. I understood the rationale. I understood what he was thinking, but this one blew up in his face in a big way. And
it did.
It's tough. It was tough to watch.
It was definitely tough to watch. You know, I got into the fourth quarter. I couldn't watch anymore. I turned the channel. Sorry, you didn't have that luxury. But yeah.
What if something happens in the fourth quarter?
I'm sorry. I had to do what I had to do. It was tough to watch. I couldn't stand. You know, the first half was hard to watch, and then the second half, I'm like, okay, they put Tyrod in, and he played a lot better. I actually flipped it back and forth. You know, I didn't just turn it all the way off. But, you know, I didn't expect for the team to come out and you have 5 interceptions in the first half. Like, I didn't expect Nate Peterman to play like he did. Now, granted, and this is not to give him any excuses, nobody played well around him on offense except LeSean McCoy. Nobody else played well on offense. The offensive line did not give him any help against that defensive line of the Chargers. You had, you know, on both sides of the offensive line, left side, right side, they did not do well in pass protection. They could not hold up against those guys. You had, you know, the fullback, the ball going off of his hands in the first interception. You have to, when you have a rookie quarterback coming in a game, you are in a playoff situation. Everybody around that quarterback has to play better than they did yesterday. Everybody around him, receivers, offensive line, the running backs, you have to step up in pass pro. Nobody was able to do that for him yesterday, and the defense didn't play well either, you know. And so it's like it's a tough situation for Nate Peterman. He played bad, but everybody else played bad as well.
Yeah. you're right. When you know, and that's part of the miscalculation, I'll call it, on the part of the coaching staff. You know, they put a guy in there who needed a lot of help, and he didn't get much help at all from the players around him. It's a big miscalculation that cost them the game in Los Angeles yesterday. We're here to talk about that game, and we're willing to talk with you about it. The phone line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We can talk about the game, how it played out, the quarterback decision that was made prior to that game, and the quarterback decision that awaits. And maybe we get an inkling at 1 o'clock today. Sean McDermott will address the media news conference at 1 p.m. today. We will carry it live, and maybe he will let us know what his plans are for a quarterback position moving forward. You know, we've been talking about it all morning. It would help us if he made an announcement at 1 o'clock, but he might not, and he might surprise us. How many times have we been out here the last 6 months and said, can't believe they did that, but they just did it? He might do that again. I think we both – all right, look, I anticipate they're going to go back to Tyrod Taylor, but there are no guarantees here. I hope so, too.
There are no guarantees here. Coach McDermott has made some shocking moves in the past since he's been here.
Yeah.
You know, and the latest being the move to switch the quarterbacks. I'd be shocked if he didn't go back to Tyrod Taylor, though. I'd be shocked if they left Nathan Peterman in. Reason being, I truly believe if you keep Nathan Peterman in there, what do you say to your locker room? Now, you have to be honest with your locker room. If you're saying we're going to keep Nate Peterman in there, you have to tell these veterans that are here fighting every day, look, we need to get a good look at the quarterback for the future of this franchise. That's the only way you have to be upfront, transparent with these guys. You can't sell the fact that right now Nathan Peterman gives us the best chance, because the game that Nathan Peterman had yesterday could not do anything to help his confidence. It did nothing to help his confidence. So you would be talking about a rookie going into another week, next week in Kansas City, in that stadium that's going to be electric.
Tougher environment, tougher defense.
Tougher defense. Yeah. They have pass rushers as well, and saying, look, we need you to play better than you did last week. That's tough to do, and that's tough to tell your veterans. And so, for me, I would be totally shocked if they didn't go back to Tyrod Taylor.
I would be surprised. I have been surprised
right.
by many of the moves they've made, and we'll stay tuned. Maybe we get word at 1 o'clock. Maybe we don't. Maybe Sean McDermott will play the, you know, let's make them guessing game. You know, let's make Kansas City guess, although you kind of wonder, you know, if you're the Chiefs, what are they guessing about? You know, where are you going to play the guy, Tyrod Taylor, who can be pretty good, or the guy who just threw five picks? You know what I mean? It's and the Chiefs are going to be desperate, too, because they've had a brief bad spell. So we'll see. 1 o'clock, Sean McDermott coming on live in his press conference today. At 2 o'clock, Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, joins us. We don't have a Twitter poll today because we figured you just want to talk about the game and about the quarterbacks and about where this team sits. So the phone lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. I'm just back from the West Coast, where the Bills lost badly to the Los Angeles Chargers. And Donald and I are here to talk about the game with you. We thought it might be instructive to start, though, with a look and listen back to the game, some of the plays made in the game. And it is time for Game Rewind, presented by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Nick O'Leary goes in motion right side. Backs in the eye. Play action fake. Peterman rolls right. Fires short. Off the hands of DeMarco. Intercepted. Picked off by the Chargers. Coming back the other way into Buffalo territory at the 30, 25. And he's still on the run down the sideline. He is into the end zone for the touchdown. The snap. Peterman looks. Steps up. Fires another one down the left side. This one is intercepted. This one is picked off by Trevor Williams down the far sideline. How could it get worse? Five first-half interceptions for Nathan Peterman. He cannot return to play the second half. McCoy in the backfield with Tyrod. The snap. Taylor looks, fires, looking for Shady. He's got him into the end zone. Touchdown, Buffalo. And we're down inside the final minute here. They're going to be at 5-5 after being 5-2 and riding high just 3 weeks ago. Game Rewind, obviously a mercifully short Game Rewind. We can show you all those plays. We are going to look at some of those interceptions as well today as we work our way through the show. And we're going to talk about, believe it or not, what we liked. There were a couple of things, and what we didn't like in yesterday's game. But first, we want to engage with you. The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The floor is open, whatever you'd like to talk about. Let's start with Paul calling from Akron, New York. Hello, Paul. Go ahead. You're on the air. Paul, you got to talk to us, please.
Yeah.
Hi.
You there?
We are here. Are you there is really the question, Paul.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Well, I guess what I wanted to say is when they made this switch, I think that we played into the teeth of the Giants because for the game, and it says that they had a great passing defense but a very weak running. So we took our passing quarterback when we tried to throw it into the teeth of the Giants when I think if we played Tyrod with his running ability, I don't think we would have won the game because of the way our defense played, but I think it would have gave us a better chance. And Sean McDermott always kind of said he plays, you know, game specific. And I think that if we were thinking that way, that would have gave us a better chance than Peterman. Not saying that he's a good or bad quarterback. We don't know that. We know what Tyrod is, but Peterman had a very poor showing and it kind of showed. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think the strength really of the Chargers defense was the outside pass rush provided by Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. And that's how it played out, as a matter of fact. And we're, as I said, we're going to take a look individually at each of those interceptions coming up here in the next couple of minutes. But at least two, maybe two and a half of them were caused by, you know, Bosa and Ingram coming off the edge. Bill's tackles had trouble blocking him right in Peterman's face. He made some bad decisions with that kind of pressure in his face. But they were a factor. Now, could Tyrod have handled that better? I don't know. We wondered this. I think Friday we're talking about this. Gus Bradley, Chargers defense coordinator, rip up his game plan Wednesday morning when he got the news. Maybe he did. And instead of playing contain with those two bookend guys, let's go at him.
I mean, you have two of the best defensive ends in the game, like bookends together on one team. And when you have a rookie coming in, let's get after him.
Yeah.
You know, let's see what he can do with pressure. You know, we don't have to contain. Look, they said that they were going to prepare for both of them. You know, so if Tyrod comes in the game, this is how we're going to play it. If Nate Peterman is in the game, which he's going to start, we're going to rush him and see what he can do. Can he handle the pressure? And that's what they did yesterday. They rushed and handled the pressure. And, you know, he wasn't able to handle it. He made some bad decisions out there, throwing the ball up in the middle of the field. You know, you can say what you want. The offensive line did not play well either. The offensive line did not hold up against Joey Bosa or Melvin Ingram. They didn't. You know, you had guys who were not blocking out there. So it was bad by everybody. Nathan Peterman, yeah, bad decisions, throwing the ball in the middle of the field. Offensive line, you have to step up and play better and block better. If Tyrod Taylor was in there, yeah, could he have gotten out of some of that pressure? Yeah, but he's also taken a lot of sacks this year.
Yeah.
You know, so what are we talking about right now?
I just think the pressure would have been different. The defensive look would have been different from Los Angeles.
Yeah, it would have. They would have played more. They would have rushed a couple of times because they had those two defensive ends.
Right.
But they would have played more, let's sit back and make him throw the ball and see if he can beat us that way.
They didn't. The Chargers didn't send a lot of blitzers. They didn't send a lot of action pass rushers.
They didn't have to. All they needed was for Bosa and Ingram to come off the edges. And the offensive line couldn't handle him.
Yeah.
And you know, Nate Peterman wasn't ready for it. He was not ready to play against those two guys barreling down on in his face that fast. He just wasn't ready for it, you know. And we talked – I can't remember who we talked to last week. It might have been Greg Cosell. And he talked about, you know, when you have a rookie quarterback in, they rush rookie quarterbacks. When rookie quarterbacks in, defensive coordinators are saying, look, we're going to put pressure and see how he can handle this pressure. Nate Peterman was not able to handle the pressure yesterday. He made some bad decisions. And I know we're about to get into breaking down some of these, but, you know, not all of those – look, he made some bad decisions, but not all of those interceptions were his fault,
yeah.
You know. So that's why it's a team game. I'm not saying that you need to stick with them because they weren't all his fault. You need to go back to Tyrod Taylor and let Tyrod Taylor finish this thing out. But yesterday, it was nobody played good yesterday on offense.
Let's work through a couple of calls, and we'll get to the picks. Joe calling from Buffalo. Are you there, Joe?
Yes.
Hi.
Well, I'm talking about the offensive line. I watched on those five picks, the first one, first of all, hit the fullback's hands and tipped in the air, so that's not on Peterman. The second one, our two tackles backed up right into the quarterback. He got hit when he was throwing, so that's why it was intercepted. On the third and fourth one, the right tackle Mills missed Bosa completely, never touched him. He hit the quarterback before he could even, as he was throwing the football. You can't blame Peterman for Mills, who did a lousy job. He didn't even touch him. And that went into the flat. It was a one-step drop by the quarterback, and he got hit by Bosa because Bosa went inside of our Mills and hit him as he was throwing. That's how the ball was thrown short. Now, the last one, maybe I would give on Peterman, but he got hit by our left tackle. The guy came inside and hit our left tackle. What I don't understand is why our offensive tackles are backing up 5 yards before they meet contact with the defensive ends. They're going backwards, and the defensive end is coming to hit them. There's no way you can stop a guy after you're back 5 yards. They should be taking 5 steps backwards, 5 yards deep. So
I'm not an expert in offensive line
either.
Play, so I won't even get into trying to say what they should be doing. I do know that when you have fast defensive ends, they try to quickly get into their drop steps so that they can anchor and be able to take them on, you know, so – I know that's how they like to play, but like I said, I'm not an expert on offensive line play, so that would be a question for Ruben.
Yeah,
maybe next
there
week.
There you go. Shem calling from New Jersey. Hello, Shem.
Yeah, how are you guys?
Great.
It's a tough pill to swallow. I mean, the Bills were on regional TV coverage for the last 3 weeks, and the showing has not been good. But I just want to say we have to stay with Tyrod until we're mathematically eliminated. And like you guys said, it's not all Nate Peterman's fault, but he should have been more disciplined. And the coaches, the offensive coordinator, should have coached him up to let him know, you know, taking a sack is not bad and throwing the ball away is not bad. Because if he would have taken like 2 or 3 sacks, that would have prevented you know, the interception, the short fields, and we could have punted the ball away. So they have to coach him up to be a little more disciplined and not so eager to just sling it. But with that said, definitely we should stay with Tyrod anyhow. And then the defense, I'm just missing the players. They look invisible as far as like Jerry Hughes, Shaq Lawson. I thought E.J. Gaines would have played big coming back, and these guys that were making big key contributions had just been invisible, and, you know, it has to change.
Thanks, Shem. And two things. I agree with you. That's the way I would play it. I'd go back to Tyrod Taylor as a starter. And number two, your point on the defense is very well made. And I know this coaching staff is pulling its hair out, or in the case of Sean McDermott, pulling where the hair used to be out, trying to figure out what happened to the defense. you know, yes, Marcell Dareus is gone. That is a bit of a factor, but certainly they have just fallen off the table defensively. And
you know,
it's hard to figure out why. Why guys who were playing well earlier and are not playing well now. And takeaways are one thing. We've chronicled that, how important they were. You can't count on 3 takeaways a game like they were getting in that 5-game stretch, but you can count on 1.5 a game maybe, you know. And I know that that's driving them crazy. What happened? Because they believe in their defense, believe in the defense they call, and maybe they're learning a little bit more about some of the players they have on defense right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you know, when you let talent out the door,
mm-hmm.
you know, it can hurt you. And I get why they decided to trade Marcell Dareus. I totally understand that. But when you let talented, true talented guys out the door, it can hurt your team. And that's what we talk about. When you're trying to change the culture, you got to make certain decisions. I get that, you know. But at the same time, how much talent are you willing to let go? You know, you want to have good characters, guys on your team. I understand that, you know. But you got to have some dogs out there on the field as well, you know. And so I got this tweet just now, and this is from Tad Dickman, who I guess is the, you know, a PR guy for media relations guy for the Jaguars. And, you know, he tweeted out the Dareus effect. Entering week 9, the Jaguars ranked last in the NFL in rush defense, allowing 138 yards per game. They traded for Marcell Dareus October 28th. In 3 games since, they've only allowed 55 yards rushing a game, you know. So yesterday played the Browns. It's whatever.
Yeah, and I watched their game the week before against the Chargers, and he played okay.
Yeah.
Look, we know who Marcell Dareus is, and we also know, let's not be foolish here, he didn't fit with what this leadership team is trying to assemble here. Mm-hmm. His salary was out of whack, and his approach, Marcell, and I like Marcell a lot as a kid, but, you know, his approach, his lack of discipline, being late for the preseason game at Baltimore, the previous suspensions, all of that added up to a guy that they couldn't abide having on their roster, having him at that number, that cap number, on this roster with the culture they're trying to build. And here come the Jacksonville Jaguars ready to take that salary, part of it anyway, off your hands and give you a draft pick in return. That's why the deal was made, I think.
Right. I mean, you got both sides of it. You know, you have, look, we got to get rid of this salary, but then you have now maybe, I don't know if it's the direct result of, you know, how they're playing against the run now, but I think it's
Jacksonville or Buffalo.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
And I think,
I don't think it's the
it's
only
not
reason.
Direct. No, no, it's definitely not direct. You guys on defense are just missing tackles. Yeah. They're not playing in their gaps. Gap integrity we talk about every week, when especially when Chris Brown comes on the show. They're just running past the ball. I'm watching the game on TV, and you know, Darryl Johnson is like, these guys are just running past the ball. You know, linebackers running out of the hole, trying to run around blocks. I don't know what that is right now, but because they're not tackling, maybe part of it because you don't have Marcell Dareus on the field, because a guy like Kyle is being double-teamed now because you don't have Marcell Dareus. There's a lot that goes into it, but nobody on this team right now is playing good, and that's just across the board. Like, the defense, the offense, LeSean McCoy played a good game yesterday. Nobody else did.
All right, let's dive into the interceptions. We want to go through them one by one. And if you are faint of heart, you may want to turn the dial off for a couple of minutes here. But and this is in no means an effort to, you know, take the hook out of Nathan Peterman, take him off the hook is what I'm trying to say. He played poorly. There's no question about that. Epically bad quarterback debut for Nathan Peterman. But each interception was kind of its own little story, and because of Donald's expertise as a former player, we want to kind of go into these a little bit deeper. And let's start with the first one, you know, the Bills' first drive of the game, and this is the one where it looked like a catchable pass went off the hands of Patrick DeMarco into the hands of Corey Toomer, who ran downfield. Could it have been a better pass? I don't know. I don't know that Peterman could have delivered a much better ball to Patrick DeMarco there.
You know, you got a fullback in there trying to catch that ball. Now, Peterman, could he have taken some off the ball? He put
right.
some heat on that
hot.
Ball.
Yep.
Could he take some off of it? Yeah, he could. But at the same time, Pat DeMarco, you have to catch that ball. You know, you haven't had an opportunity to catch many balls this year. This is one of your opportunities. It was a simple rollout. You had Pat DeMarco, you know, going in the flat right in his vision. Peterman throws him the ball. It was right in his chest, and it bounced right off his hands into the defender's hands. And that's a horrible way to start out the game. You know, it was just downhill basically from there. Could he have taken some off the ball? Yes, he could have. But at the same time, as a fullback, if you're catching the ball, which you have known to be a catching fullback in the past, you have to be able to catch that ball, and you got to make that play.
To his credit, DeMarco said in the locker room, that one's on me. So that's one. Now, we're going to see, like, I think sort of a cascading effect of these interceptions when they started to pile up. And then the next one was a little bit worse than the next one. But the second one came just a couple of minutes later, and the Bills had 3rd and 8 at their own 11, deep in their own territory. And Peterman's looking for Brandon Tate. And this is where the pressure comes in, where Bosa came off one side and Ingram came off the other, and Peterman down by the goal line, about the 1 or 2 yard line, just puts it up for grabs.
Yeah.
As the pressure contributed, but if you're the quarterback, you got to be more careful with it. You can't just throw it down the middle, a floater down the middle, despite all that pressure.
And, you know, and this is what we're talking about, a rookie quarterback. You have both those guys, Bosa and Ingram, both barreling down. You had, you know, nobody blocking. I mean, he tried to block them, but they both, Deion and Jordan Mills, got blocked back into Peterman's face. Now, what Peterman did wrong was, yeah, the decision was a very bad decision to just throw that ball up. But the first thing he really did wrong was backing up and trying to make a throw off of his back foot. He's supposed to step up in the pocket. You know,
if he can. Could he have room? I don't know.
He had some room to step up. Those guys were coming from the outside. He had some room to step up in the pocket and make a throw. I think it was Thompson going down the middle of the field. If he would have made a strong throw, you know, he could have had him. But he tried to back up and throw it up for grabs off of his back foot. That's what you can't do as a quarterback, and that's why that ball was intercepted.
That's two. Interception number three, late first quarter, the Bills 3rd and 10 from their own 40-yard line. And again, pressure, this time Joey Bosa. And this time Bosa just totally gets away from Jordan Mills on the right side, gets right in Peterman's face, and this one is picked off by Trey Boston down the middle.
And the same thing, you know, you have guys really barreling down on him. And this, look, you had your first two interceptions. The offensive line has to say, all right, we got to get things corrected. Once again, off the right side of the line, Jordan Mills did not pick up Joey Bosa. And Joey Bosa is coming in fast. So you had the running back and Jordan Mills not pick him up. Now, once again, Nathan Peterman, you have to do something else with that ball, you know. And people will complain if he took the sack. People will complain if he threw the ball away and it got intercepted, you know. So you can't really win, but you have to do something else with that ball. I'd rather you take the sack than to just throw it up for grabs in the middle of the field. If you're going to throw it up, throw it to the sidelines at least, where it has a better opportunity of going out of bounds. You can't just throw it up in the middle of the field.
So that's three interceptions in the first quarter alone, and the Chargers capitalized on that last one, got the touchdown pass to Keenan Allen. So Los Angeles up 17-7 early in the second quarter, and things are looking bad. This is where the cascading effect, the snowball effect, I think, comes into play. First play after that score, Bills down 17-7. Peterman had thrown the three picks, and the fourth pick was one that all I could think about was what you talked about when the change was made last Wednesday or Thursday on this show about a three-step drop quarterback, a guy who the ball's coming out. Defensive backs know that. They know that. And in this case, Hayward knew that the ball was coming out, took a chance with a 10-point lead, jumped the route, and made a big play.
You had a simple speed cut, speed out by Deontay Thompson. And like I said last week, when you have a quarterback who wants to get the ball out of his hands, and then you have a defensive line that is getting there fast, both of those things combined, and you have a rookie quarterback now that his confidence is hurt. His confidence is shot. He wants to get that ball out of his hands because he does not want to get hit again. Those DBs understand that. And those guys, now I'm going to jump everything. You want to run a comeback? I'm jumping that. A hitch and a simple outcut, I'm going to jump everything because I know you are tired of getting hit and you want to get that ball out of your hands faster than you normally get the ball out of your hands. He can't make that throw, you know, or you have to put it. He also threw the ball back inside. You can't do that. If it's an out route, you have to put it on the sideline where only your wide receiver can catch that ball. But that is just a result of him being hit and already his confidence was already shot at that point.
So that's four interceptions in the first 17 minutes of game time. Chargers would score on that possession, go up 24-7. They'd get a field goal, go up 27-7. They'd get a touchdown on really bad defense by the Bills, a 57-yard scoring drive. The Chargers are up 34-7 late in the first half, and the fifth interception. You know, I got to say, after that last one, too, and the three-step drop and the defensive back jumping the route, I did say to Mark Kelso on the radio side, you know, what are we talking about here? Maybe they should make the move to Tyrod Taylor here. They did not. And by the time the fifth interception came, I mean, the issue was settled. You know, the Bills are almost headed to the locker room down by a ton.
This
fifth interception is tough to watch, though, too, for Nathan Peterman.
The fifth interception is something that I think is a result of a rookie quarterback coming in and not really knowing the wide receiver. You know, you only have a few days to learn these wide receivers. He's playing with everybody else. He's playing with the scout team, really, in practice. You know, Deontay Thompson runs a curl route. Now, I'm not sure if he was supposed to keep going. I don't know where the mix-up in communication was or if Nate Peterman just threw a bad ball. You know, this is what we don't know because we're sitting here just watching. But I will say this. If you're running a curl route on that route, you have, as a quarterback, have to put that ball outside. Okay? You can't put it inside. You can't leave it inside because the DBs, when they jump routes, they are taught to jump and run through your inside shoulder. Now, that DB didn't even jump that route. He didn't even jump it. You know, Deontay Thompson actually beat him on the curl or hitch route or whatever that route was. He beat him on that route. If it was a good ball to the outside where it was supposed to be, then, you know, we would have had a completed pass, and maybe Deontay Thompson would have had an opportunity to catch that ball and run with it. But because he threw it high and inside, the DB, all he had to do was turn around, and the ball went right into his hands.
So there you are, the five interceptions and the end of the day's work for Nathan Peterman after that. And, again, we talk about these not by reason for, you know, excusing the bad play. It was bad play, not just by Nathan Peterman. But I do think it was worthwhile going through it pick by pick by pick by pick by pick and to see what went on and how that could happen. How could you throw five interceptions in the first half? You just saw how that could happen, and it's not just the quarterback's failings.
No, it's not just the quarterback's failings. And what we would all say is, look, if Tyrod Taylor was in there, he probably would have just taken the sacks, or maybe he would have been able to get out of those pressures.
Or thrown it away.
Yeah.
And that's the value of 2.5 years worth of starting experience.
Exactly. You know, and so, you know, you talk about the decision to bring in Nate Peterman. That was a tough decision against that defensive front. It really was. Those guys were getting in the backfield so fast. I mean, even though he gets the ball out fast, I didn't expect for it to end up the way it did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you have a defensive front that can get to the quarterback fast, usually when you have a quarterback that gets it out of his hands, you know, fast, then that really bodes well for that quarterback. But when you have a rookie in there and his first time seeing this type of pressure, he doesn't even know where to go with the ball. You know, all he knows is, I keep getting hit. I got to get this ball out of my hands. Yeah. And he's getting hit at the same time he's throwing it into the middle of the field, and you just have a ball, you know, spluttering up in the middle of the field.
A calculated risk, Sean McDermott called it last week when he turned to the rookie as the Bills went into that game 5-4. And, you know, I think as you look back on it, with the benefit of hindsight, you look at it and say, you know, it was an unnecessary risk, clearly. And, you know, a miscalculation to think that Peterman would be able to help them win. It wasn't all his fault, but a miscalculation on where he was in his development and how he might play. And we'll see how they do it going forward.
And we're
going
to talk about this, I'm sure, moving forward. But the question now is his confidence now. You know, where is his confidence now as a quarterback? Because, look, you talk about next week, Kansas City has some pass rushers that can get to him just like San Diego does, you know. So, I mean, L.A., lost the Chargers, did, exactly. So you got to think about his confidence and where it is before you make this decision on if you want to put Nate Peterman back in or put Tyrod Taylor back in.
Hopefully, I'm sure that will be part of the calculation. Do we get the answer today? We don't know, but we're going to carry Sean McDermott's news conference live at 1 o'clock, at which time he may say what he's doing at the quarterback position moving forward. That's coming up at 1. Chris Brown's coming up at 2. More discussion with you coming up in the next few minutes here at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. This is going to be like a long, painful visit to the dentist today.
Yes.
Isn't it?
It is.
I'm not got a little pain right here.
I mean, these 3 hours couldn't fly by any faster. This week.
The back of
we
my
got
neck.
3 days this week. Yeah. Like, just get through this.
We'll get through it. We're back with more in a moment. Actually, we're going to hear from the locker room when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
First down, Buffalo at the Chargers 27. They're going to run McCoy again on the pitch left side. Dodges him in. He's at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! LeSean McCoy over the left side. Touchdown, Buffalo!
One of the really rare highlights of the game, that's a Hilbert College call of the game. At Hilbert, the community, the feeling, and the values are different. See Hilbert College, see differently. Go to hilbert.edu/see different. That was a heck of a run. And great work by the left side of the offensive line by Richie Incognito and Deion Dawkins. And a great little move by LeSean McCoy.
And the play before that was a big run.
Yeah, 37 and 27 yards back
to back. Yeah, exactly, back to back. So, look, LeSean McCoy still has what it takes to be a big-time running back in this league, you know, but he does need help on offense. He needs a passing game so that he doesn't have to face 8-man, 9-man boxes every week, you know. And so I'm sure he probably looked at the game yesterday and he's saying to himself, dude, something has to give here. You know, he's been saying it all week. I mean, all year. Something has to give here. I need some help here. I can run the ball, but I'm running against 8- and 9-man boxes every week. You know, and this offensive line can't block that every single week. It's tough to do. You're playing some of the best defensive lines in football today, you know. And so if you can get a passing game going, a consistent passing game going, you'll see LeSean McCoy play like he's been playing the last couple of years. And we saw it yesterday in the beginning of that game. But once it got to a point where you had to actually now pass the ball, well, LeSean McCoy then went silent after he was already over 100 yards.
Yep. On paper, a good look for LeSean McCoy yesterday as far as statistics. Doesn't amount to much, obviously, but McCoy wound up the game with where is it here? He caught that one touchdown pass for 12 yards and ran it 13 times, 114 yards, and scored on
a good touchdown run. And I'll tell you this, and I know we're going to get into, you know, things that we liked and things that we disliked. One of the things, and this we didn't say this in the office, but one of the things that I like about that game, Travaris Cadet.
Yeah, me too.
I think he will give this team, you know, a different boost. Not to say that, look, you have Mike Tolbert. Mike Tolbert can help you maybe in some tough yardage, but I like Travaris Cadet. I like the way he caught the ball yesterday. I like his moves. I think he's explosive. And he ran over a safety yesterday, and I was like, oh, that's what I'm talking about, because I would almost guarantee you that safety did not expect for him at his size to lower the boom on him like that. And he got up clapping like he did something right. Like, dude, you just got put 6 feet under the turf out there in L.A., 6 feet under the soccer pitch out there. He ran that dude smooth over. I liked the way he played yesterday.
I actually talked to him in the locker room yesterday, and he, you know, and it was a terrible locker room, as you might imagine, but Cadet, in his own way, and he's a veteran, understood that this was a big game for him and that he saw himself as a contributor in whatever they were able to accomplish
right.
on offense yesterday. He said, and they'll give me a chance to run the ball too, not just catch the ball, which he was excited about.
Right, exactly. You know, and when you're a veteran and you're a guy who has bounced around a lot, all you can ask for is opportunities, yeah. you know, and that game yesterday was a perfect opportunity. Let's take our star running back out. This game is already out of hand.
Right.
Let's take our star running back out and see what this kid has. He might have found himself a home for the next few years by the way he played yesterday. Because
at least for the next seven games.
For the next seven games. But if he plays like he did yesterday,
yeah.
you know, you got to think long and hard about, I like this kid. Yeah. You know, maybe we should keep him here because he gives us what, you know, we didn't have in our backup running back position.
Right. Here's a call. We'll take a call from Rochester. Debbie calling from Rochester. Hello, Debbie. Thanks for checking in with us.
John. Hi. Hi, Donald.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I want to tell you, I love your show.
Well, thank you, Debbie.
I listen to it faithfully every day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We need that.
Okay. Well, I followed up, of course. I'm sure you're going to get a million phone calls. But what I'm calling for is to point out a few observations. I've been watching the Bills since 1968, so I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Yesterday was pretty ugly, but I think I wanted to make a couple points, and then I'm going to hang up and listen to your thoughts.
Okay.
One is about the coaching. I think it's like anything, John and Donald, you guys work great together. You have formed a good chemistry. But the coach keeps changing, you know, all the players, so I'm not so sure they're unified. The other thing is, Peterman, is that, you know, yeah, he had a horrible day. But it wasn't all his fault. The defense, a high school team could have beat them. So I think they need to go back to the drawing board and change a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I love Buffalo. I'm still going to watch them. I'm still a fan. But, you know, I don't know what you guys think. But, you know, you have to have cohesion within a team, with any position, any job you have in your life. And I don't think they have that right now. So that's my thoughts, and I'm just going to hang up and see what you have to say.
Thanks, Debbie.
Yeah. You know, it's so hard because you're trying to, and he's said this so many times, you're trying to change the culture. We got to change the culture here. You know, they haven't won in 17 years. You got to change the culture. And so he feels like we got to change the players. The players that are here haven't been able to get it done, at least for the last 8 years, for guys like Marcel and other guys, you know, Sammy and those guys that have been here for the last few years. They haven't been able to get it done. So – they also have the thought process of you build a team, a consistent winning team through the draft. And so how do you add draft capital? You trade away your players,
right.
You know, and look, other teams around the league want your star players. And so we're going to give draft capital. We're going to give you some draft picks for a Sammy Watkins. We'll give you a draft pick for a Marcel Darius, for a Reggie Ragland, who's starting down there out there in Kansas City. I'm sure he's going to be amped up this week to go against this offense, which is something we'll probably talk about. And I understand everything that you're trying to do, but when you let talented players, guys that have been on this team, guys that have been in this locker room, that people really like in the locker room, you know, guys that have been together for a long time, you start taking pieces off the board, you know, it's tough. When you
talk disruptive.
About, yes, it's disruptive. It's hard for a team to now – I don't know this guy. This is a rookie. I don't know him. Now I have to play next to this kid. You know, it's tough to do. I understand what they're trying to do, but it's hard to do. And you're seeing the results of that. You know, you had a team that started out hot. Well, now things have gone south. And I don't know what's going on, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But they have to get it together. They are not able to stop anything right now. Look, Melvin Gordon looked as good as I've ever seen him look yesterday. And Keenan Allen, they couldn't stop him.
Phillip Rivers looked good yesterday.
Oh, my. Really. Like, they couldn't stop Phillip Rivers. They couldn't stop Keenan Allen for anything yesterday. He looked – and I've had a chance to meet him, you know, hanging around with Stevie out there when they were in San Diego. And I know he's a very good, talented receiver. They could not stop that kid yesterday.
He looked like Jerry Rice yesterday.
I'm telling you, it was crazy.
Yeah, he did. Hey, so I spent about 3 hours in the broadcast booth calling the game, and then about an hour after the game in the locker room doing a couple of interviews. And let's take you into the Bills locker room. Time to go around the locker room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. Sean McDermott on Nathan Peterman's performance.
It wasn't what he had hoped for or we had hoped for. You know, at the same time, you know when you put a young player out there, a young quarterback, that there's going to be some ups and downs, and this is part of it. And, you know, the good part about Nate is I know he's a mentally tough individual, and he's a good football player. So, to me, it's not indicative of who he is as a player, but you know that you're going to go through some of this. All good players do.
Quarterback Nathan Peterman on the snowball effect.
It was, I didn't play very well, when those things start to happen, I got to just be able to let it go, and I got to put a lot on myself. Guys, all over the team are saying things, encouraging things, and saying that, hey, you're young, you're going to learn from this, and telling me a lot of their stories, too. So definitely helpful. We got a great team here, and a lot of good teammates.
Quarterback Tyrod Taylor, how do the Bills get out of their current slump?
Confident in my ability, also confident as far as a leader, being able to talk to the guys, offense, defense, and as a team, and get everyone on the same page. We have the guys in our locker room, talent-wise for sure, that can go out there and turn things around, but mentally, to be able to fight through this, and we're going to do it, and I believe 100% we're going to do it.
Defensive tackle Kyle Williams on putting it back together.
There's no magical thing that's going to happen by feeling sorry for yourself or, saying, woulda, coulda, shoulda, So we're going to get back and we're going to go to work and we're just going to continue to work. The only way to get out of it is work your way out of it, and grind your way out of it. Obviously, we're up against a mountain of adversity and I've never quit anything in my life and I'm not going to start now.
Center Eric Wood on the Bills' mindset after the last three games.
It's really tough to lose like that. No one quit. A little silver lining. We got to stay together. We got to fight. We got to get it rolling and get out of this funk we're in right now.
Cornerback Tre'Davious White, what's wrong with the Buffalo defense?
We ain't taking the ball away. Take the ball away, flip the field. That's what it's all about. We just not doing it right now. We can't stop the run or the pass. So.
Why do you think that is? Why aren't those takeaways happening?
I don't know. I mean, it's not the preparation. I mean, we've been preparing the same way we were preparing in the first half of the season. I don't know what it is.
There you go. Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. We're back in a moment with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy in the backfield with Tyrod, the snap. Taylor looks, fires, looking for Shady. He's got him into the end zone. Touchdown, Buffalo.
There it is, the touchdown pass to LeSean McCoy from the Hunt Real Estate Red Zone. Visit huntrealestate.com to score on all of your real estate needs. John Murphy and Donald Jones from One Bills Drive. Yes, sir.
We need to see more of that from LeSean McCoy and Tavares Cadet now.
Yeah.
These guys coming out of the backfield, wheel routes, put them in the slot. Let these you get LeSean McCoy in the slot, and you line him up on a safety or you line him up. He's like a receiver. You line him up on a linebacker, they cannot cover. We saw it yesterday. There was a route early in the game, and there wasn't their running back. It was Keenan Allen. He got lined up on Ramon Humber, and he made Ramon Humber look very bad yesterday. Yeah. With the simple, he got to the top of his route, boom, boom, went in like a slant or an in-cut type of thing, wide open. Yeah. You put LeSean McCoy in the slot and see who's covering him. At least at that point, we're in man coverage or they're in zone because you have a linebacker out there or they have a DB or somebody else coming down to check him. You can line him up outside at receiver as well. He can run a go route for you. He can run an end cut for you or something like that because he is like a receiver.
Well, I was going to say, I haven't made it through video the whole game yet because of the late hour last night getting back. But my recollection of the game is that they did use LeSean a lot, split out to one side or the other. Sometimes slot, but very often as the outside guy too. Yesterday.
He's so dangerous. You can't just say, all right, our running game is shot. We can't really use LeSean McCoy. We got to throw it to our wide receivers. LeSean McCoy is a dangerous player in this game still today. As long as he's been in the league at, 30 years old, he's still a dangerous player in this game. And he's a mismatch for any safety or any linebacker that is trying to cover him. And so put him outside.
Yeah.
Let them throw the ball to him and see if he can come down, make a play for you. And I almost guarantee you that if he has a linebacker or a safety, he's going to make that play. Look, they play the Chiefs coming up. I watched the Chiefs yesterday before the Bills played the Chargers, I watched the Chiefs play the Giants.
Yeah.
And watch how creative Andy Reid is with those running backs and wide receivers that he has. I mean, this dude is creative. He has them lining up all over the field. That's how they need to use LeSean McCoy because he is a weapon out there.
We are minutes away from Sean McDermott talking about his game yesterday, his team's game, and maybe giving us a clue as to where he's going at quarterback. Going to carry that news conference live when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where we await Sean McDermott's news conference this Monday after the terrible loss yesterday in Los Angeles. Sean McDermott may have some news on where he's going at the quarterback position. After the game yesterday, McDermott said he would evaluate his starting quarterback situation for next week's game against Kansas City. That after rookie Nathan Peterman threw 5 interceptions in the first half in his starting debut. Buffalo's 54-24 loss to the Los Angeles Chargers. McDermott also may have an update on the status of wide receiver Calvin Benjamin, who left the game early yesterday with an apparent knee injury. No word on how serious that could be. We will carry the head coach's Monday news conference moments from now, live from One Bills Drive. Denver Broncos, with one of the league's least efficient offenses, have fired offensive coordinator Mike McCoy, according to ESPN. Broncos coach Van Joseph told McCoy today, this morning, he was being relieved of his duties. Adam Schefter of ESPN says quarterbacks coach Bill Musgrave will be promoted. The move comes after the Broncos fell to 3-7 yesterday with a 20-17 loss to the Cincinnati Bengals. 6 consecutive losses for the Denver Broncos. Monday Night Football tonight, the Atlanta Falcons and the Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks go into this game with a 6-3 record, Atlanta at 5-4. Seahawks lead the all-time series 10-5. 8:30 kickoff at CenturyLink Field in Seattle tonight for Atlanta and Seattle. Former NFL wide receiver Terry Glenn has died after being involved in a suspected car accident in Texas. He was 43 years old. He played parts of 12 seasons in the NFL with the Patriots, the Packers, and the Cowboys. Made the Pro Bowl in 1999. Terry Glenn, then a member of the Patriots. And the Buffalo Sabres tried to snap a 5-game losing streak tonight when they host the Columbus Blue Jackets. Robin Leonard will get the start and goal for Buffalo. Sabres coming off a 3-1 loss at home to Carolina on Saturday night. After tonight, 2 more home games in a row for Buffalo. Home against Minnesota Wednesday, home against the Oilers Friday. Face-off 7 o'clock tonight. And that is the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, John Murphy and Donald Jones. And as we said, we await the appearance of Sean McDermott at the podium as I don't know. He might not announce his quarterback today, Donald. I don't know.
I mean, you know, if you just look back through the history since he's been here, it's like throwback Monday. Since he's been here, you know, for the last 6 or 7 months, he's never made a decision quickly. You know, it's always gone down to, you know, the last minute, last second before he really has to make that decision. So I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't make that decision today. And if he doesn't make that decision today, it's going to make our shows the rest of today and tomorrow and Wednesday until we get to hear from him again a lot longer. But, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't make that decision today because he's probably going to say, I want to go back and watch the film a little
right.
bit more.
He might say that, which would drag this out a little bit, which would be interesting. And I do believe this, too, and we're, you know, we're moments away from this news conference, and that's going to be important. The quarterback decision is important, but there are plenty of other issues that McDermott has to fix, and they won't be decided in a news conference at all. Starting with his defense, you know, they've got to get that defense better. They cannot compete. They've given up an average of 45 points per game over the last 3 games. Saints are pretty good. The other 2 teams are not good, you know, the Jets and Los Angeles. And, I mean, that's disaster to give up 45 points a game. That's been their average the last 3 games. And it's not as if we didn't see this. This hasn't been the story all year for the defense. We saw this defense perform quite well early on. They were giving up 13.5 points per game through the first 4 or 5 weeks. They were taking the ball away at an unprecedented rate for a 5-week time frame, and now it's just gone.
Is it gone.
Darius a little bit? But you can't all explain it due to Darius being gone.
And the crazy thing is it happens, though, you know, where you'll have one bad game against the Jets, and then next thing you know, against the Saints, which are a very good team, they come in at home and lump you up, and it just goes downhill, you know, and you can never get it back together, you know. It can happen, or it can go the other way where you'll be having a horrible season, and then you have one good game, And it just goes uphill from there, you know. And it happens to teams every single year in every league, but especially here in the NFL with only 16 games to play, teams go on skids of 5-6. You're talking about the Denver Broncos. Nobody expected them to lose 6 straight games, and now their offensive coordinator is being fired. The Bills right now, you know, they lost a tough one down in New York or in New Jersey, the Garden State. And then they come back home and get lumped up against a very good team, probably a Super Bowl team. That's going to be a good battle, you know, if they end up playing the Eagles in the NFC Championship. And then you go out to Los Angeles and lose to a team that is not that you weren't supposed to get blown out. If you lost a game and you just lost a game, it's because that team played harder than you. You're not supposed to get blown out by the Los Angeles Chargers. And now, this week, you're going into Kansas City in a tough environment against a team that has lost some games themselves, and they want to stay in the thick of this playoff race. And so they're going to come out ready to go at home because they just lost on the road, you know. And so if you don't get it together, you are in danger of going on a very bad losing streak because you have Kansas City and then you have the Patriots. I mean, that can be all bad for you if you don't get it together this week.
It's important to note, I mean, you know, the sky is falling here in Buffalo. I get that, and it should be the way they played, and the magnitude of the 3 consecutive losses they've suffered, giving up, what, 34 points to the Jets and 47 to the Saints and 54 yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
That'll get your attention. I get that. But teams do weather the storm after 3-game losing streaks. I'm trying to think who it was I was talking to in the locker room. It might have been E.J. Gaines, who kept saying that. We will weather the storm. We're going to weather the storm. And I think he's onto something. You know, I mean, yesterday's opponents, the Chargers, had a 4-game losing streak earlier on this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, do teams recover and go to the playoffs? Yeah, it's ridiculous to envision playoffs for the Bills team the way they're playing now. But if you look at the standings, and people don't like to hear this today, they are still tied for the 6th and final playoff spot in the AFC with their 5-5 record, 3-3 in the conference. They are tied now with the Baltimore Ravens, who I think last week on this show we talked about how Baltimore was the threat. Baltimore is ahead of them by virtue of some tiebreakers, best win percentage in conference games. Baltimore is 4-3, and the Bills are 3-3. So, you know, 5-5 is certainly come down from 5-2, where we were 3.5 weeks ago, but it's not over. As much as people don't want to believe that, it's not over.
It's definitely not over. You're still in the playoff race, you know, but like you said, it's hard to imagine this team the way they're playing right now. It's hard to imagine them being able to get this thing back on track because they are not playing like a playoff team at all. They're not even, you know, in the beginning of the season, we were saying, you know what, all year you can say this team, win or lose, is going to be in close games. By the way they were playing in the beginning of the season, nobody expected it to be 3 straight blowouts. Yeah. You know, that's not what we were used to seeing out of this team. And I don't know what it is, but they're not playing like a team that even wants to be in the playoffs. They're playing like a team that is just out there so they don't get fined, like Marshawn Lynch said. You know, I mean, that's truly how they're playing right now. You have to get it together. You got to play with some passion, play with some pride. I don't care if you're on the road and not at home. Play with some pride. You can't just go out there and get blown out, and get your butt whipped like Lorenzo said last week, week in and week out, up front, just getting manhandled up front on offense and defensive front. You know, on the back end, forget the turnovers. Just letting guys beat you on routes, every single route. Wide receivers, yeah, you have some injuries now. So the backup wide receivers, it's time to get in here, step up, and make plays. Whoever the quarterback is, it's time to get in here, step up, and make plays. Have some pride about yourself. Have some pride about this organization, about this city, and get this thing going in the right track.
And the wide receiver injuries are consequential, I think you'd have to say. And we don't know the status of Kelvin Benjamin, how long he might be out, if at all. But he could not finish yesterday, left fairly early on. The Bills played without Jordan Matthews yesterday with his knee. He was not able to go. And so you're looking at the wide receiving core taking another hit. Zay Jones played a lot yesterday. Deontay Thompson played a lot. Brandon Tate, who I'm sure is not option one when it comes to wide receiver talent for them. Andre Holmes, I mean, 4 healthy wide receivers at the end of that game yesterday. They might have to go out and make a move to shore up those ranks, depending on how Matthews is and whether or not Kelvin Benjamin comes back. It is overlooked, I think, the Benjamin injury because of the magnitude of the defeat and because of the historically poor performance by Nathan Peterman. But that could be a major loss. Kelvin Benjamin, who came in here supposedly to revitalize that receiving core and to provide the targets downfield, the pass-catching targets that this offense desperately needed. If they're without Kelvin Benjamin for an extended period, with 6 weeks to play, that's going to be a big loss, a major loss.
That is a major loss because you're back to now not truly having a number one wide receiver. If Jordan Matthews is ready to go, I wouldn't expect him to go out there and make moves. I think that's – I don't know what's going on with Kelvin Benjamin. It did not look good yesterday, and I watched the replay and everything. It just didn't look good. And the way he grabbed his leg, that did not look good, right? But if you can get Jordan Matthews back, you'll have five receivers, and ultimately – I think Charles Clay is your number one receiver anyway without Kelvin Benjamin, and he's shown it. They continuously go to him, and Tyrod is going to throw him the ball. I think they're going to use LeSean McCoy more in the passing game. I think they're going to use Tavares Cadet more in the passing game, and I think you'll have your five wide receivers outside, and I wouldn't expect them to go look for anybody if Jordan Matthews is healthy.
What did you think of the hit on Kelvin Benjamin that took him out? My partner on Sundays, Mark Kelso, suspected that it might have been kind of a dirty hit. And I looked at the video this morning. Adrian Phillips, the safety from the Chargers, hit him low, but I almost think it was unfortunate timing. He hit Benjamin when his right knee had been extended, and the hit overextended, it appeared, just bent the wrong way. I don't know if he was targeting his knee or trying to go low and hurt.
From what I can remember, he hit him right on that, right below, between your knee pad and your thigh pad, And the unfortunate part was, number one, Kelvin Benjamin is 240 pounds. And so that's a lot of weight coming down on that leg right while he's getting hit. His foot is planted in the turf, and you got that weight coming down on it, foot planted in the turf. There's nothing that can happen right there. I don't think it was a dirty hit. I mean, look, if the safety comes up and tries to hit him high, then everybody would be complaining that you hit him high, you hit him helmet to helmet, So DBs now are in a situation, especially when you got a guy that's 240 pounds, you're in a situation where you are going to go low. So I think he didn't even hit him with his helmet. He hit him with his shoulder, So I don't think it was a dirty hit at all.
And it's – I mean, again, we're speculating. We don't know if Kelvin Benjamin will miss time. We'll find out, I think, over the next couple of days here. But that play, that 20-yard pickup, was indicative of what Kelvin Benjamin could do for this offense.
It was a quick slant.
Yeah.
And I would
And he got separate. I mean, he made a veteran move, got a little separation using his hand to push off a little bit. Not going to get called for that because he's so adept at it. A quick slant, knows where to go with the ball, and that would be really unfortunate if he misses much time.
I almost wonder if Nate Peterman had Kelvin Benjamin on the field, would those five interceptions have happened? Because at least he knows, all right, I'm getting pressure. I got to throw it up high to Kelvin Benjamin. I know he can go up there and get it. But because he didn't have him, he didn't feel comfortable with anybody else. Kelvin Benjamin was probably a big part of the game plan as they threw it to him. Was that the first play of the game that they went to him? It was early.
No.
It was very early in the game, and it was a quick slant, a big gain on a quick slant. And that is what he can do, those big sixes as he talked about, the end cuts, the slants, the comebacks, the hitches, the deep balls down the field. That is what he can give you. Now you're back to what you had before you had Kelvin Benjamin. So now we're just back to where we were, back to square one, and you go back to Charles Clay. You go back to Deontay Thompson as your speed guy. You go back to hopefully Jordan Matthews can come back. Even Zay Jones made some plays yesterday, and looked like he's starting to really come into being a good receiver in this league. You got to go back to those guys and just make plays. Everybody step up and make plays. It's time to go.
All right, we await Sean McDermott, the Bills head coach, going to meet with the media, and should be any minute now. In the meantime, we will hear from you. We'll take a phone call or two, and if we have to cut out because McDermott steps to the microphone, we will do that. Let's go to NJ in Williamsville. Hello, you're on the air with us.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a comment, quick question about what happened yesterday in the game. I'm watching and I'm seeing these interceptions in the first quarter and, in the second quarter. And I would say I think three or four interceptions happened when there was 10 minutes left in the second quarter. And I'm trying to figure out why McDermott didn't pull Peterman from the game earlier on instead of waiting till after halftime, because we could see those points ticking up on the Chargers. And we weren't doing anything on our side because we were just throwing interceptions. So I'm just trying to figure out why he would wait until the second half. And, you know, I understand last week why McDermott made the decision he did to let Peterman play just to kind of see where he was. But once he saw those interceptions, why wasn't he pulled?
That's a legitimate question. I mean, the fourth interception came with 12 minutes left in the second quarter. That was a point when I asked Mark Kelso on the broadcast, do you think this is the time? And they didn't, and I'm counting it up. There were one, two, three, four offensive possessions after that, and the fifth one, you know, coming at the end of the quarter.
And as we talk about how bad the defense played yesterday, they played horrible, but they were also getting put in very bad positions. You know, I mean, those interceptions they were catching – and they were getting the ball on the 30-yard line going in, the 40-yard line going in.
15-yard line.
Yeah, 15-yard line going in. It's like, man, and a couple times they actually stopped them and forced field goals, you know. It's hard to play defense in this league when you're playing against Phillip Rivers, Keenan Allen. Who else do they have on that team? A bunch of – Melvin Gordon, who was playing well yesterday. They got good tight ends, probably a Hall of Fame tight end. It's hard to play defense against a team that has all of those weapons when we keep getting backed up. And we have to stop this team that's already in the red zone.
Here's a call from Tom in New York City. Welcome, Tom. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question. I guess I'd like to see the Bills get, you know, coaches that can adjust the game plan and the players. I mean, if you look at who we had in 2015 for our wide receiver, we had Watkins, Goodwin, Woods, Hogan, you know, McCoy, Williams. And it's like, they sit there and say, you're going to be a pocket passer, whether you can do it or not. We're going to fix this square peg in this round hole. And I'm thinking about Gilmore at the beginning of this year, Stephon Gilmore for the Patriots. He was getting toast. I think the Patriots went back. They adjusted some stuff, adjusted what he did, and now he's playing great. And the other thing is, why aren't the defensive coordinator and the offensive coordinator on the field? If you look at the Patriots, they're always on the field, and especially starting a rookie, your offensive coordinator should have been on that field.
Well, Rick Dennison had been on the field up until yesterday. He moved upstairs, and maybe McDermott will address that in his news conference in a couple of minutes here. We'll carry it live. I have a sense that Dennison probably wanted the upstairs look, you know, maybe because he had a rookie in there, maybe not, but he wanted the upstairs look to see coverages. And so they switched it up yesterday. It didn't work, and as usual, when it doesn't work, you should have done the other thing. But I think you make a good point, Tom, about square pegs and round holes. And, yeah, I get it, and I know you want to bring in your own players, but I also think coaches should have an obligation to identify the talent they have on the roster and to tailor. They don't have to rewrite or scrap their plans, but tailor their plans to the talent they have there. And I think they should – all coaches, not just this coaching group, but all coaches should be more flexible and sort of adapting to what's on hand. I think the good ones do that.
I think the good ones do that, you know. But at the same time, you bring in certain players. You bring in guys like offensive coordinators who are older who have been doing – or defensive coordinators who are older and have been doing.
Let's go to the podium. Sean McDermott steps to the
podium. Open it up for questions. Yeah, still evaluating right now. So I understand where you're coming from on that, and still evaluating, and we'll take it one day at a time right now.
How much, given some of the players' comments this week that they were waiting until Wednesday to hear from the quarterback, how much does that weigh into your decision on when to make this decision about the quarterback?
Are you saying how much does...
Players seem to be caught off guard that it happened on a Wednesday morning instead of earlier in the week, this past week. So how much does that weigh into when you make the decision on a starter this week?
Right. Well, you know, last week it happened really on a Tuesday, and when I gave the quarterback's notice. And so I do think about our team and everything I do. This decision, Mike, other decisions, I think heavily about our team and every decision we make.
The perception of as poorly – Nathan Peterman played poorly – is to continue on with a player who had five interceptions through the first half. What message might that send to the team, do you wonder?
Well, let me start off here with Nathan. You know, one game is not going to define Nathan or Nathan's career. You know, young players go through it, and you saw some of it yesterday. And I put that back on myself. I own the decision. And I still, as I said yesterday, you know, I don't regret the decision. I regret the result. And there's other hands also in the result. So it's never about one player. And I'm confident in Nathan and his mental toughness. You know, we move forward, we learn, we grow from it, and we get better.
Sean, to that point, because we don't see practice, we don't see him in the meeting, what specifically did you see from him that he was able to grow enough in that 2.5 months to where you felt comfortable enough with starting him in that spot at 5-4 and in a playoff spot at that point?
Right, that's a fair question, Joe. I've evaluated, like we do all players, Nathan from the time he walked in the door and really before that. And you watch how he handles himself intangibly because that's a big part of it. That's a big part of the quarterback position are the intangibles of all positions, let alone the quarterback position. You watched how he developed skill-wise, how he studied, how he prepared himself for the opponent, how he became familiar with more and more of NFL schemes and how he performed in practice and then the preseason games and then the short sample of the game the other week there. So that was all part of his process as we continued to evaluate Nathan. And so, you know, I remain confident in Nathan. And you know, there were some plays yesterday I know he wants back. There was also some plays where when you look at it, you say, that was pretty darn good, you know. Hard to see on the surface, you know, 10,000-foot view, hard to see that with the result being what it was. When you take it one play at a time and you really look at it and say, hey, we're moving the ball. And, you know, sometimes you got to throw and got to catch. And so, but again, I own the decision and that's on me.
Some people, the critics out there will say that the decision for you to start Peterman backfired. Did it backfire?
Well, sometimes you make decisions in leadership roles like this that work out, and sometimes they don't work out. And I think the biggest thing is you try and make every decision with the right agenda, with the right decision-making process in mind. And that leads you to the decision that you feel is right. And that's what I felt like in this case. And I stand by that decision. Obviously, it didn't work out. And so you go back, you learn from it. I learned from it as a head coach. And I expect us all to learn from it. We grow and we move forward as we continue to build.
John, can you continue to sell the idea that you're trying to win now and plan for the future when you're not even sure which quarterback is going to play?
Well, we're building, you know, and building a part of it. You go through, this is part of the growth process, Bucky, with, you go through these pains. This, you know, it burns. It burns hard, you know, and you know, you don't want that result that we had yesterday. And I've been on the other side of it, too, And so every decision we make is with the thought of winning now, yes, but also winning in the future. And so that's part of the vision for this organization.
I'm not even looking at it like in an emotional whether it hurts way. The way I'm seeing it is that if you come back with Tyrod, then that's a sign to me that you're trying to win now, and he would give you a better chance to win now. He's more experienced. He's had more games and more success. If you're going with Nathan, then you're looking more toward the future. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty clear to me. Am I wrong on that?
That's your evaluation. You know, I have to see it through my lenses.
Yeah, and that's what I'm asking for.
Yeah. No, I mean, both quarterbacks have their own abilities and own skill set, and so I'm always going to look at both. You know, how best do we equip our team to win now? And also set ourselves up to build for a strong future, and that's part of that process, as I said earlier.
Sorry.
Yeah,
that's right. You said there were some plays of Peterman's that were pretty darn good, that were wild plays, maybe not wild plays, but ones that you can build on. Can you point out some of those to us as to what makes you feel optimistic about him going forward?
Well, you just go back and look at the first drive. I think we started off with two runs, and then we came out and threw I believe it was a play-action pass over the middle. And I believe it was Kelvin's play, in fact. And, you know, he hit Kelvin right in stride. And it was tight coverage. He threw it into a tight window. And this is a league of contested throws, contested balls, And you've got to be able to do that, and he did it. And now there was a couple other instances also, but just to name one, we got into a rhythm early on the offensive side, and so I was pleased with that drive up until the point where, you know, we had the interception, and then, you know, things went downhill. But we came back the next drive, and the running game got on track there the next drive, and we scored the touchdown. So there were positives in there, and. You know, so there was growth. There's growth for our football team. And I know on the surface the result wasn't there. But when you look at these guys played physical in all three phases. They played hard in all three phases. And as we grow, as we develop, as we build, we're developing a standard, too, of how we do things. We're developing a culture of how we do things and what it needs to look like. And I get it. Sometimes we're not going to get the result we want. Sometimes there's a lag effect, and I've talked about that before, as you build and grow and develop things. And that's painful, you know, and that's the way it's been the last couple of weeks. I know that. I get it. And I shoulder that responsibility.
John, will you meet with your leadership council regarding the quarterback decision?
You say, will I?
Will you meet with them, yes?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm first going to – you know, evaluate on my own and then evaluate with our coaches, and then there's a progression. And I always try and communicate with the leaders of this football team. So,
on the heels of what Jay just asked, yesterday after the game, Tyrod said that leadership council meets with you. You know, they talk about these things and said these are the things that we'll talk about, meaning, you know, if he'll go back in, obviously Tyrod, his position is impacted. But how much do you weigh what they say in that meeting to you? About this decision or about really any big decision that you make personnel-wise?
Right, that's a good question, Sal. I put a lot of stock into that. You know, they carry a lot of weight. Obviously, I have the final say, and they respect that. They've done a phenomenal job with that to this point. They're the guys. They're on that council for a reason. They're my sounding board on some things. So, you know, I give them a lot of ownership into this team, and they've done a phenomenal job with that to this point. Yeah, real quick on Kelvin. You know, the good news is there's no ligament damage. And so, you know, we're still under evaluation on the rest of it at this point. And then Micah checked out fine. He should be fine.
Sean, what feedback did you get from ownership before you announced the quarterback move last week? And maybe what feedback did you get since, you know, the game yesterday?
Well, from day one, Kim and Terry have given us everything we've asked for. They've supported us to the nth degree, and in this case, no different. You know, I made the decision, certainly communicated with Brandon on it, like we do every move, and then briefed Kim and Terry on it. So they've supported us from day one on all of our decisions, and they do a tremendous job of giving us the resources to win.
What do you think it does to your credibility in the room, you know, when you – put a guy in there in the middle of the playoff hunt and you think he's ready and then he plays the way he did? What do you think that does to your credibility with the guys?
Well, you know, at this point in the season, I've hoped with them that I've built up enough credibility, trust, and then there's also a human element of it that, hey, I'm trying to do what's right, and not every decision, man, is going to work out exactly like I wanted it to. And that's, you take responsibility. That's what you do. You know, you hope by doing that, you know, over time, you're going to make more right decisions than you make that aren't so right. And, you know, but I'm going to learn from it at the same time and get better. And just like I expect them, you know, they're not always going to play one play that's exactly right, but they're going to learn from it and grow and get better. That's also part of the growth process. That's also part of building and growing and becoming better.
Along those lines, you mentioned, you know, it was a calculated risk and you kind of, you know, were willing to step out on that ledge. How do you... the next time you're going to make a decision like that, does it enter the back of your mind? Like, how do you trust yourself, I guess, to continue to, you know, not let your thought process be affected by, you know, the result?
That's a fair question. Stay decisive, stay confident, and be decisive. You know, as a decision maker, when you waver is when you get yourself in trouble. And so you've got to stay, obviously, listening to people, listening to opinions of people I trust, communicating with people, and then also when a decision needs to be made, be decisive and go with it.
Are you still, Sean? You guys have talked about since day one building something that you can sustain.
Is that still first and foremost what you're trying to accomplish here? You're in a playoff hunt with a lot of other teams, and yet there's also something beyond the season.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, this is, you know, there's certain things that we want to do, and yes, we want to win, and that's big, and there's also certain things you want to establish, you know, where you're saying, hey, as we move forward, I know we've established a standard. I know we've established a culture. Those are big, and then also that we've established a competitiveness about who we are, about how we approach each day as we move forward, and so that's big as we continue to grow through this and learn from it and become stronger to develop that strong foundation, Bucket, that you mentioned.
When you look at Nate's game, how much do you factor in not having Kelvin for most of that game? How do you factor in potentially not having Kelvin up with his next game against the Chiefs?
Well, it was unfortunate. You know, anytime you lose a player at all, let alone a player like Kelvin, was really excited to see him in the offense, to see him work with our quarterbacks. You know, he was off, obviously, to a good start in the game. So that was unfortunate. Again, like I said after the game, Mike, it's never about one player. We're a team. We play as a team. And the next guy's got to step in and step up and do the job.
Specific to Nate, though, is that something where you might give him more of a break because he didn't have his top receiver for much of that first half?
I evaluate the big picture. You know, I mean, who's in there with him and so who's not in there. I mean, you do. That's part of it. Again, it's not about one player, though.
Was it as bad as it looked when you looked at the – when you reviewed the game, after the game, you know, since the game? Was it as bad as it looked?
Well, you know, anytime we don't take care of the ball, you know, on the surface, that, you know, it was what it was. That said, like I said, there was some really good plays in there, baked into that. And then, you know, it's never about, again, just one guy. We've got 11 guys on the field that got a block, they got a throw, they got a catch, and so, you know, there's a lot of parts to the overall play and the execution of a play. And so that goes back to me. I've got to do a better job there.
John, how much does Rick Dennison factor into the decision on which quarterback to start?
He's obviously, it's my final call on that. But, you know, I communicate with those guys, and part of communication is listening. And I've got a lot of trust and faith in my staff.
Did you communicate with him before the initial decision to start, Nathan?
The initial decision was mine. Was mine.
Coach, I know you said you felt your players played physical. Mm-hmm. You talked a lot the last 3 weeks about teaching fundamentals, preaching the fundamentals, harping on them. You know, I know Tyrod didn't have the benefit of watching the game film like you did today, but he said yesterday the team's got to get back to a physical mindset. That's not something you can really teach. You've got to, as a player, have the desire, the attitude to play physically, and I'm kind of referencing the line of scrimmage specifically here.
And I thought they did yesterday. I really did. You know, we wanted to go out and have the right mindset. I thought we had the right mindset. You know, I thought the guys came out and attacked early, you know. Thought we played physically, in particular in the run game. And I know we had a run or two pop on us defensively, which was more about gap integrity. It was more about technique than it was our physical mindset at the line of scrimmage. And thought we came out and run the ball and ran the ball well early in the game in particular, before the game in particular got away from us. So I saw a physical approach and a physicality of our football team really in all three phases. And that, to me, is part of not the result that we saw on the scoreboard, but that's part of the growth that I saw yesterday from our football team.
I know it was a little bit of a shift in terms of the play calling with Rick upstairs. Did everything go pretty smoothly as far as that goes?
For the most part. Right, yeah. You know, for the most part, we had a situation with the headset earlier there. We had to burn a timeout, which I don't like doing. So I like to save those, as you know. You know, that said, for the most part, Rick's used to being upstairs. You know, we had some staff issues earlier with some guys had some injuries that couldn't be on the sidelines, so we had to switch some things around. Now we're back to really, you know, the way we wanted to start from day one.
Coach, why was Keenan Allen getting so loose yesterday in the secondary? Obviously, you guys, he had put up some big numbers in the first half. What was going on there, do you think?
Well, a good receiver, but that's not all of it. And we can play with better technique and you know, just look at, are we putting the players in position? And so just, again, a lot of parts go into that and you know, just – formation recognition, knowing where a player like Keenan is and making sure we're trying to get hands on him and get the matchups we want. And, And so, you know, they've got a talented group of receivers. And so it's never about one guy and you watch him and then you put, you know, two guys on him and then somebody else pops open on the other side, you know, Gates or whomever it might be. So, you know, they've got some weapons on that offense and a good quarterback. And he was throwing the ball into some tight windows at times.
There was one play where you made the switch to Tyrod before halftime at all?
No.
Was there any lesson you wanted Tyrod to learn by being benched and you think you received it?
No hidden lesson that he and I already haven't talked about. Just really, you know, for us, it's about becoming better, becoming stronger. And there was no hidden message or hidden lesson. It's, you know, I believe in communication with my players and being direct.
There was one play that got a lot of attention among fans where it looked like Shaq Lawson was trailing in coverage. I think it might have been Keenan or Tyrod Williams, one of those. What happened on that play and why was he put in a position where he had to chase a receiver?
Well, zone pressure, you know, it's a very common to those around the game, very common scheme approach. And we got out of position on the other side of the defense a little bit, and it looked like he was, you know, the only man that was supposed to be running with the intended receiver right there. That was not the design, and so we have to, you know, make sure we execute better. And that goes back to technique, execution, and time on task, you know. And I've been around this before. You go through and time on task. We've got some young players and we have to, and new players to this system. We have to develop time on task so that when they default in the heat of the moment, they default into the fundamentals that we need them to default into. And so that just takes repetition, proper repetition over and over and over again.
Quarterback decision or no quarterback decision, how do you go about compensating for what the defense is not doing, and that's it's not turning the ball over? You haven't been, so far over the past 3 games, you haven't been able to find a solution. How do you compensate for that?
Well, sometimes those come in bunches, as I said, when we were getting them, you know, and so, you know, we try and get back to creating turnovers, emphasizing it, drilling it, working on it. If you don't emphasize it and you don't drill it, don't expect to get it. And then you got to give the offense credit too, you know. So they take care of the ball, and they get, you know, they're doing their job also. So there's some give and take to that. So we have to continue to emphasize it, drill it, and I'm confident we'll come up with some more in the future.
But if you can't create turnovers, how do you get over that hump? Because you've proven so far that you can't win without turnovers.
Well, you know, when you look at stats around the league, when you create turnovers, typically that correlates to winning. And I don't think we're rare as a team that way, in terms of you get turnovers, you come out positive on the turnover margin, you get a better chance to win. So I think generally speaking around the league, that's true of most teams.
John, you mentioned that, you know, as a decision maker, when you waver is when you get yourself in trouble. How do you convince the team that you're not wavering when, you know, when they go home tonight, they don't know who the quarterback is?
Well, I think they know me well enough to know that I don't make any decision, you know, no decision is a snap decision. It's, I'm going to think it through and evaluate. That's, you know, going to put ourselves in the best position for us as a football team. So, like I said before, you know, I'm confident in those guys and they know how I do things and you know, we're going to try and put our best foot forward.
With what you just said being the...
This gentleman back here keeps trying to ask a question.
Before you make your decision on how important is the evaluation of the offensive line going to be? Because I saw, like, you know, Tyrod is unbelievable when he has pressure to get out of the pocket. But, you know, you're saying that with Peterman, he's more of a pocket passer, and that's more fit for this offense. But obviously the offensive line didn't give him a lot of time. So how much does that come into the factor about who you look to start this week?
Well, it does. It comes into consideration for sure. Just like when you put a puzzle together, all the pieces, you know, you can't just look at them separately, you know, they all come together to form one big puzzle. So that does, you know, impact the decision. You know, you go back and you look at, you know, Derek Carr comes into the league years ago at a high pick, and you know, we all know what his career after that first year looked like. So you know, that's, I've been around that, I've learned from that just by watching that from afar, and so that's a part of it also. You know, like I said, it's one big puzzle that we got to put together.
Sean, said about no decision being a snap decision, I mean, with a decision as important as who is going to start at quarterback in a game, how long have you been contemplating whether or not to start Nathan Peterman over Tyrod Taylor?
Well, you always look at everything, you know, just like every position. You know, say, hey, here's the starter. How's the starter performing? How good is the backup? Is he ready? And so whether it's quarterback, fullback, wide receiver, that's what we do every day, in particular the days following a game, Joe, to evaluate our roster and who is earning the right to play, start, be a backup, be on the roster. That's all part of the process.
When did that thought with Nathan specifically start to surface in your mind?
Oh, again, like I said, you know, you asked me on that Monday following the game last week, who was the starter? And at that point, you know, Tyrod was the starter. I hadn't gotten to that in my mind. And when I did, you know, I was decisive and made the decision to go with it.
Sean, there are some out there, including a few, you know, some fans that think yesterday was one of the low points of the playoff drought. I know you've only been here, you know, 10 games, but how does that sit with you, you know, having fans having to deal with what's gone on in the last 3 weeks?
Well, I wasn't here for 17 years. I got here 10 months ago, and that's what I'm focused on. I'm focused on going forward and what we're building. And we're building something bigger. And sometimes that takes going through some stuff, and I get it, and I own that. I'm also here to lead this organization through it, though, too. That's why I came here, and that's why I moved my family here and the other families. And I'm confident that we'll get through it. Thanks.
There you go. Sean McDermott, Bills head coach, addressing the media for about 20 minutes or so today. And the quarterback decision, he says, still evaluating. We're going to take it a day at a time. And he says he will take his time for this. It will be knowing what we know about Sean McDermott after his 10 months, he will deliberate on this. He'll think about it. I'm not sure which way it's going to go.
He's going to think about the decision. He's going to go back and watch the film. Last week, like he said there in the early parts of that press conference, he told those guys on Tuesday, you know, he told both of those guys on Tuesday. So I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't do it the same way this week and tell both of those guys tomorrow, and then we find out on Wednesday what the deal is. but with what he just said, everything that he just said, it wasn't a resounding, I'm going back to
right.
Tyrod Taylor. So don't be shocked if it's Nate Peterman
right.
that we hear is the starter on this week, this Sunday.
I won't be shocked at anything anymore. Right. How they play, what they say. I mean, it's just been one of those years. We're going to come back and talk more about this. And, of course, we'll get your phone calls when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones on this Monday. And get ready for quarterback talk for however long. It might be a couple of days at least, huh?
It might be a couple of days. We might be talking about this the rest of the season.
Oh,
You know, because if they go back to Tyrod and he doesn't play well, then what? You know, right. Then we'll be talking about the draft. They right. stick with Nathan right. Peterman, then right. we'll be talking about you need to put Tyrod back in and talking about the draft. So I think the rest of the season we're going to be, especially if the team doesn't start winning some games here. This is all we're going to talk about.
No clarity from Sean McDermott moments ago on his quarterback situation. He said he's still evaluating. He will take it one day at a time, whether it's going to be Tyrod Taylor or Nathan Peterman to start the game against the Chiefs. Tyrod Taylor had an interesting reaction. Was this overnight or this morning? The Bills quarterback Tyrod Taylor, was it this morning?
Mm-hmm.
Sent out a tweet in regard to the current quarterback situation, and it said, new week, our best is yet to come. Everything is under God's plan and his timing. Let's go be great. I admire the way Tyrod's handled all this, Donald, all the controversy, all the focus on him and the decision. I think he's hit the right tone.
Yeah, I think he has. You know, he's handled it as professionally as he could. He probably has some different remarks to his family members.
Yeah.
You know, like, man, this is terrible. But I think he's handled it in the public as well as he could. And I think he's been supportive of Nathan Peterman.
Absolutely.
As well.
All right, we're going to break. We're going to get your comments. We're just up against it because McDermott went so long. But we'll get your comments on the air when we return. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to One Bills Drive. We've got Chris Brown coming in at 2 o'clock. We'll talk with Brownie about the events of the day. The events include Sean McDermott saying he's still evaluating. the quarterback situation for the Buffalo Bills. If you have thoughts on that, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Doug in Marilla has a thought on that. Doug, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Okay.
I totally support McDermott's decision to go with Peterman because 3 years now, I think we've seen Tyrod's best and what he can do for us. You can't evaluate Peterman based on two quarters of a play against the number one pass rush defense in the league. I think it's a little too early to tell, and that seems to be the consensus right now.
Consensus where?
That being said, a chance, and from there, you know, see what he can do.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a consensus, and I understand. I think there's a pretty wide variance of opinion on this, on what the Bills' next move should be. And I'm not talking about the end of Nathan Peterman, but at some point, Doug and Donald aren't, you know, based on that performance by Nathan Peterman, they could be doing him a bit of a favor to get him out, let him clear his head, and take it easy a little bit for a week or two at least. No?
You know, people would look at this differently, and the coach might look at this differently. He might say, okay, he had a bad game. We need to get him back out there to show that we have confidence in him. Other people will say he had a bad game. You need to get him out so that he can kind of chill and let things, you know, just ease over a little bit.
While you still have a shot at a playoff berth.
Right, that too.
Yeah, right?
yeah, you know, but
are
once
we writing
again,
that off? Even
I don't think we're – I don't want to write it off, you know, but with what Coach McDermott said there and what he says, you know, obviously it's about winning now, but it's about winning in the future as well, you know. So he's not really giving you any – And he also talked about, you know, some of the plays and the drives early in the game, you know, that he was impressed by Nate, you know, handling. And so it's – I don't know what his thought process is. I think you need to go back to Tyrod Taylor now. And last week I said you can't, but I wasn't expecting five interceptions. I think you need to go back to Tyrod Taylor now, let Nate Peterman just chill and learn a little bit more.
Yeah, and look, I don't think that Coach McDermott waiting – day or two to make this decision is any real big deal. We'd all prefer that it be over and we can move on. But, you know, he's deliberative. I think that's one of his strong suits. You know, he takes things into account. Probably hasn't had a chance to talk to either quarterback yet. The Bills, you know, landed at 2:30 in the morning. Probably hasn't a chance to completely and totally review the video from yesterday's horrible performance against the Chargers. Probably hasn't had much of a chance to talk to his coaching staff. What do you think? What do you think? You know, David Culley, what do you think? You know, Rick Dennison, what do you think? So I don't mind him taking a little time here. I don't think we prefer to have
breaking we'd all
news.
Want to know, you know, but we'll find out Wednesday.
Yeah, we'll at least by Wednesday. All right, a break here. Chris Brown standing by to join us. We're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to talk about what we liked and what we didn't like in the game yesterday. All of that in the third and final hour of the show. The John Murphy Show presented by NEPA Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. No decision today. No decision announced from head coach Sean McDermott on where he's going with his quarterback situation. McDermott met with the media in the last hour, says he is still evaluating whether to go with Tyrod Taylor or Nathan Peterman as his starter against the Kansas City Chiefs this coming Sunday. McDermott says we'll take it one day at a time. McDermott had decent news on injuries anyway. Wide receiver Calvin Benjamin, good news according to McDermott, no ligament damage, but they are still evaluating the injury to his right knee. Safety Micah Hyde should be fine, according to Sean McDermott. The Bills coming off that pasting yesterday, 54-24 loss in Los Angeles to the Chargers. Peterman replaced in the second half by Tyrod Taylor, who was benched last week for the rookie fifth-round draft pick. McDermott says no decision yet, and we'll let us know. He'll let us know when we find out. The Denver Broncos, with one of the league's worst offensive attacks, have fired offensive coordinator Mike McCoy, according to ESPN. A source told ESPN that Broncos coach Vance Joseph informed McCoy this morning he is being relieved of his duties. Quarterbacks coach Bill Musgrave going to be promoted to offensive coordinator. The Broncos have lost six in a row, including yesterday's 20-17 loss to the Cincinnati Bengals. Denver is now 3-7. Monday night football tonight, a couple of decent teams, the Atlanta Falcons and the Seattle Seahawks in a big NFC matchup. Seahawks are 6-3, coming off a win at Arizona last week. The Atlanta Falcons coming off a win against Dallas last week. The Falcons go into the game with a 5-4 record. Kickoff 8:30 tonight at CenturyLink Field. And the Buffalo Sabres home tonight. against the Columbus Blue Jackets, and Sabres head coach Phil Housley is shaking things up. He said his top line will be centered by Ryan O'Reilly with Evander Kane and Sam Reinhart, and that means that Jack Eichel is not going to be on the top line. In fact, he won't be on the second line, demoted to the team's third line, unofficially, according to Housley. Housley says, I do not see it as a demotion. He said, Eichel is a terrific player. You can put anybody on his wings. That's the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Chris Brown joins us in studio. Sounds like a demotion, doesn't it, if Eichel goes from the top line to the third line? That's a demotion.
I guess, unless miraculously the third line gets more ice time. One, two, three, I mean, I think we kind of know how the ranking goes there.
Yeah. So let's talk hockey for the next few minutes.
No, not really.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, in studio with us to discuss yesterday's game, today's announcement, or non-announcement yet from Sean McDermott. You are welcome to join us as well, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. No announcement made by Sean McDermott last hour, Chris. I don't mind him. In fact, I expect him to be deliberative and take his time about this decision.
Competitive advantage, I think, is an element of this decision, too. However, yeah, minuscule you may think it might be, I think the coaches, and maybe it's because they're this close to it, you know, hand to face, that they think there's more to it in terms of a competitive advantage. I don't think there's any debating that Tyrod and Nate Peterman are two very different quarterbacks, mm-hmm, in terms of skill sets. You know, if you're trying to win a game and you think there's a measure of competitive advantage there, I mean, who knows? I mean, he might know what he's doing come tomorrow when the coaches have to put the game plan in, but who's to say he's going to announce Wednesday even,
right,
who's starting? I'm sure the team will know, and maybe that'll siphon out somewhere through some media channel, but I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. Last week was an unconventional decision and a calculated risk, as Coach McDermott said himself. One certainly that I don't think any of us expected. So it's all on the table this week. It's all on the table.
It's definitely all on the table. What would you do if you were the head coach?
I think it's really hard not to go back to Tyrod. If 2017 is still on the table, you believe in your heart of hearts as the head coach of this team that 2017 is still – a season where you can do some damage, make a run, then Tyrod goes into the lineup. I was transcribing Coach's press conference before I came over here, and just listening back to it, it was hard for me not to think that he was almost making a case as to why he has to deliberate about this decision further.
Well, I got a reason why. I mean, Nathan Peterman is nationally renowned now for his debut game. He probably doesn't want to dump on him the very next day. How about that for a reason? You know what I mean? Just make
right.
it worse, piling on.
Well, I'm wondering if he's trying to make a case to go back to him this week. That's what I was wondering, because I'm listening back to it a second time going, one game doesn't define Nathan Peterman. I have confidence in Nathan Peterman. Maybe he's just trying to prop him up. After what was a humiliating performance for him, no question. But in the same sense, I'm wondering if he's sitting there building a case today for him. I'm not saying that is what he's saying, but there is a thought process in the back of my head saying, is he building a case to go back to him again this week?
We all had the same thought, yeah, right, Donald, out here. I mean,
yeah,
we've been whacked. Well, a 2x4 a couple of times, but
I'm telling you,
coach.
I mean, what he was saying.
We have been, right? You have been too. We're doing what? Okay.
Yeah, okay. You got to just roll with it. But when he was talking, I'm like, wow. I don't know if he's gonna. It's not resounding that he's going to go back to Tyrod Taylor right now. It's like I need to go back and watch the film some more.
So if you thought you were shocked last week, you know what I mean. Like, like I said, it's all on the table. I don't think we can rule anything out right now, because it's very clear to me that Coach McDermott is a guy that has the courage of his own convictions and doesn't care who he upsets. Now, here's where it gets a little dicey, because, you know, he's going to talk to his leadership council this week. And as Tyrod said in yesterday's press conference, nobody takes offense to what's said in that room. Mm-hmm. And I think after this past week and the way it went downhill, I've got to believe there are going to be veterans in that room, some who might be in the last year of their career in the NFL, who are going to say, not for nothing, as much as you want to win in the future, I'm not going to be here next year. I'd like to win now.
Yeah.
So put Tyrod in the lineup. It's not going to shock me if some opinions like that are voiced in that room. And, you know, Coach McDermott's going to have to take that in, let it breathe, and decide what he wants to do. I think you can certainly make an argument here that if you don't go back to Tyrod, there's going to be some fracturing in that locker room.
That's right. Yeah.
Because there are guys in there that genuinely believe, and I know there's a certain portion of the fan base that genuinely believes, your best way to win now is with Tyrod in the lineup. Deficiencies and all. 65 yards passing and all. Whatever you want to call it. Those are all valid. And you can certainly back up your argument to support that. Best opportunity to win now is with Tyrod in the lineup. At the same time, there seems to be, just trying to read between the lines here, a belief in Nate Peterman on Coach McDermott's part that he thinks there will be traction that goes beyond one half of play.
As far as his ability and his progression.
His ability, his progression, all of that stuff. You know, and the line that stuck with me the most from his press conference today was, when you waver from your convictions, that's when you get in trouble.
Yeah.
What that says to me is, I don't want to flip-flop quarterbacks.
Right.
So we can read into that whatever we want. That could either mean, A, I don't want to go right back to Tyrod again. I want to stand by this rookie quarterback who, you know, I believed in and I still believe in. Or it could mean we tried something, it didn't work, we're going to ride Tyrod the rest of the way. I'm thinking that he's leaning rookie right now.
Okay.
As crazy as that's going to sound for some fans, just based on what he said. I could be completely wrong reading the tea leaves here, but
right.
Just the way he seemed to be building a case today, it's hard not to think he's not afraid to stick with the rookie. Could it change between now and Wednesday? It absolutely could. It did last week.
Right.
It did last week. So,
you know, it's so hard because as we sit up here and talk, as the fans sit out there and tweet us about things, if we feel a certain way, you know, that doesn't really matter. Ultimately, it's his decision. But if we feel a certain way, there are players in that locker room that feel the same way.
Absolutely.
You know, and the players in the locker room know, look, this guy right now is not ready. This guy gives us the best chance to win.
Well, the problem is the only evidence, the evidence that coaches use for who they think should be in the lineup goes far deeper than the evidence that players use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's just a fact. Okay, Coach laid it out today from the intangibles that he observes in Nate Peterman going all the way back to the Senior Bowl in January and the pre-draft process to sitting down with him at the Combine for 15 minutes in an interview session to how he interacts with teammates here from OTAs to now to the progress he felt he's made in executing the offense in the practice setting, in the preseason, in that little bit that he played last week, some of the throws he even made yesterday, albeit he had 6 completions. He's weighing all of that. And the only evidence that the players are going on is 5 picks in the first half yesterday, right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But when there is that big a contrast in what one person uses as evidence and decision-making, and there's a coach who's got 6 months of evaluation, I think there's going to be a difference of opinion.
Right.
And it could – there's some fracturing that could happen there as a result.
And that's what I was getting at, because now you have a coach who's weighing out everything and saying, if he does say, this is the guy we're going to go with, we all have to rally around him. Those veterans and certain guys will say, look, I've been playing for a while now. I want to win now. Like, I understand the whole future of this thing, but like you said, Ronnie, I might not be here in the future. And if you don't have plans on winning now,
Like, why do you expect me to go out there and put my body at risk every single play?
And that's the key here, because as ticked off as fans might be by the decision that was made Sunday and the result that we saw, the players have so much more invested in this season than any fan could hope to have. You know, as Donald said, they're putting their body on the line every week. They're investing countless hours of time in preparing for a game each and every week. And the letdown that yesterday was just so gigantic. I mean, it was like diving off a cliff. Mm-hmm. To rebound from that emotionally, let's forget about the physical demands of the sport. Let's just think psychologically, emotionally here, knowing football is an emotional sport. To come back from a 30-point loss that probably was worse than that, and rally yourself knowing, hypothetically, that the rookie quarterback could be back in there again, I think it's going to be a heavier lift for a lot of the veteran players on this. They're all professionals. Right. No, don't get me wrong. They're not going to just mail it in, but I think it's going to be hard to get back to, let's rally.
Trust
here we
the
go.
Process, all of this.
You know, that whole thing. It's hard to just ratchet yourself up again if you, in your heart of hearts, disagree with what coach believes is best for the football team. It's hard to get there. And I mean, it's human nature. It's not because anybody's a dissenting guy in the locker room or anything like that. I just think it's human nature. You believe one thing, it may not jive with what the coach believes. I think it's going to be hard to get there and play your best for a few guys in there. It's just human nature. It's the law of averages.
You know, everything that we've talked about with this team is this team, to this point, has truly bought into Sean McDermott. They've bought everything that he has sold them to this point. All right? All of the moves that have been made since the Sammy trade to bringing in Kelvin Benjamin, to letting Marcel Darius go, all of that stuff. They have bought into everything. Trust the process. They have bought into everything, but now one half of football, which how bad that half was, if you decide to go back to that quarterback, it can truly divide the team, and you will have guys that say, you know what, they're not trying to win now. I have to – now it's time – and this is going to sound selfish, but we're talking about players in the NFL, guys that, you know, certain guys want to get paid. You have certain guys that, you know, are saying, this is my last year. I'm just going to go out here and have fun. You know, I don't really believe in that decision that coach is making. I don't think that kid is ready to go. I don't think we're trying to win now. So I'm going to go out here and have fun for my last season, or I'm going to go out here and try to get the stats that I can get so maybe I can move on next year, you know, because they're not trying to win right now.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com in studio with us. A call here from Ron in Buffalo who has thoughts on this topic, I believe. Ron, go ahead. Ron, are you gone?
You waited a long time. Ron is gone.
Waited a long time to go.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, Ron. let's go to Dean in Tonawanda. Hello, Dean.
Hi, Mr. Murphy, Mr. Jones, Mr. Brown. I'm just calling to reiterate the fact that there's definitely a problem that was exposed with our offensive line. They're horrible. And with the attributes that Tyrod brings to the table, his scrambling ability when the plays break down. But you look at the formula that the Jets use, they box them in. You figure in the next two games, they're going to have to go with backups in all positions to see what's going to be for next year. Hmm. If you look at our schedule, what, we got maybe one, maybe two wins that you could possibly say?
Yeah, you don't know that, but go ahead, Dean.
Right. I mean, you look at the schedule 1 week at a time. Too much changes from 1 week to the next in this league to definitively say this is a win, this is a loss. I think the problem here is the quarterback has become such a polarizing issue right now that some fans are just at a point where they want to say, and Dean, thanks for the call, at a point where they just want to say, let's just look at 2018 now. We're not going to win another game. Let's just put Peterman in there and see what we have. Some people look at the AFC and see how messed up it is in terms of teams that are hovering around 500 and say, dang, we still got a chance at this.
Yeah.
Get Tyrod in the game and let's see if we can get there. And the quarterback position is polarizing some of the other problems that are plaguing this team as a result. I mean, you look at run defense right now. Holy cow. I mean, gone from third to 24th in the league in 3 weeks. Can't get off the field. First downs allowed per game. I mean, those are going up. You think about the fact that this team went 22 straight possessions against opponents on, you know, opposing offenses at 22 straight possessions, and the Bills couldn't force a punt. And I know we're talking about one of the best teams so far in the game right now in the New Orleans Saints, but from the 13-minute mark of the fourth quarter in Week 9 against the Jets to 3 minutes left in the third quarter yesterday, that was the span of time that no offense was forced off the field via punt. There was either end of a half, end of a game, or a field goal or a touchdown or a takeaway, that takeaway being the fumble recovery by Kyle Williams against the Saints. That's it. They can't get off the field right now. I still think the play in the trenches is sorely lacking. Coach felt, after watching the tape, that his team played physical in all three phases. And I think there were spots where that was true in terms of the run game specifically, which I thought probably looked as good as it has in a month. But they were playing the worst run defense in football yesterday. So they should have some big plays like that, quite frankly. I don't know if I can agree with Coach completely that they had the same physical mindset that we saw from this team in the first month of the season. You think about that Carolina game and what a grind that thing was. Mm-hmm. And Carolina's a good team.
Yeah.
You think about the grind that game was, and they were one play away still from winning that game. Why? Because their defense was laying the wood in that Week 2 game against Carolina, against a physical football team. I still don't think they've come close to that in the last 3 weeks from a physical perspective. And Tyrod, I asked Tyrod that specifically. I said, you know, Tyrod, you had a chance to observe this game from the sideline, a unique perspective for you. Mm-hmm. You got to watch both sides of the ball, you know, without worrying too much about the next series and this and that. And what did you see on that line of scrimmage? And he said, we absolutely have to get back to a physical mindset as a team because that was critical in our five wins this season. Now, he didn't have the benefit of watching the tape after the game, much like Coach did today before speaking to the media, and it was Coach's opinion that they were physical. I'm just not seeing it. They're still losing at the line of scrimmage, and it is costing them yards, it's costing them time of possession, and it's costing them points, for and against. And I don't know how you change that, because Coach and his staff can teach fundamentals till they're blue in the face. If you don't have the attitude to mesh with that other team, down in, down out, that you're not going to be outworked, denied, making a play, whatever it is, you're not going to win. You're just not. This is a game for physical people that love contact. And if you're not going to match the intensity level of the guys on the other side of that line, you don't have a prayer. Yeah. I don't care who your quarterback is.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, joining us on the Bills, the quarterback situation. And Sean McDermott wrapped up his news conference. Well, he started it about an hour or so ago. He was asked an interesting question, Chris, and I want to get both of you guys' take on this. But let's hear what McDermott said. He was asked the question, what did the quarterback decision that he made just about a week ago, what did that do to his credibility among his players in the locker room, some of the issues that we talked about a couple of minutes ago? Here's what McDermott had to say about that.
At this point in the season, I've hoped with them that I've built up enough credibility, trust, and then there's also a human element of it that, hey, I'm trying to do what's right, and not every decision, man, is going to work out exactly like I wanted it to. And that's, you take responsibility. That's what you do. And, you know, you hope by doing that that, you know, over time you're going to make more right decisions than you make that aren't so right. And, you know, but I'm going to learn from it at the same time and get better. And just like I expect them, you know, they're not always going to play one play that's exactly right, but they're going to learn from it and grow and get better. That's also part of the growth process. That's also part of building and growing and becoming better.
You called it a week ago a calculated risk to start Nathan Peterman. It was. It was a risk that essentially blew up in his face. But, right. you know, there's something to be said about being gutsy enough. I'm back to gutsy from the other day to make a call like that, knowing that it could go wrong, and it went horribly wrong. I can't help but think about the famous Teddy Roosevelt quote about being the man in the arena. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
And you're out there, and you're sticking your neck out there, and you're making calls and making decisions, and you might be wrong sometime, but you stick your nose in there and do it again. I kind of admire that about him.
Right, and, you know, it's – as you listen to that soundbite right there, as he talks about, and he says a lot of, you know, we need to grow as a team. We need to build as a team, and that's what we're doing. We're building. Once again, as a player in that locker room, if you're a guy who's older, a guy who's at the end, the tail end of your career, you have to say, I understand that you want to build and grow as a team, but I came back here to win now, you know, and so you have to make certain decisions that help us win right now.
Yeah, but you can't make team decisions based on that, based on, oh, I wonder if this old guy is going to bail on me if I don't, you know, do the, make the decision he wants.
You know, but there's also a reason why he speaks to this whole leadership council, you know, because he wants to get the temperature of the room. He wants to get the temperature of how his guys feel, you know. So he's taking that into account. He's obviously going to make the last decision, but he's taking into account how his guys feel about the decisions that he's made.
And he was asked, Chris, about the leadership council and you plan on sitting down with them? And I think he was sort of vague on his response, but I wouldn't be surprised, knowing what I know about Coach McDermott and the thorough nature of his decision-making process, if at some point today, this off day for the players, he picks up the phone to whomever on that leadership council and says, hey, what would you think if I did this? What would you think if I did that? He's an information sponge, McDermott is. He wants to know what people think.
Well, and I think, based on what he said today when he was asked about the leadership council specifically, that he wants his players to take ownership in the direction of the football team. They all know that coach has the final say, but I think it's important to afford your players the right to provide input, and he has done that. But taking it a step further and going back to his comment and what he just said, you have to give him credit for practicing what he preaches. He's talking about growing, learning from mistakes. He's doing that himself as a coach, in addition to trying to pull his players through this learning process, adversity, setbacks, and plowing through those things and stay in the course. I just still feel like he's building a case.
I don't know. You might be right. Look,
I could be completely off base.
I've been off base so many times over the last 10, 12 months that I am hesitant to even speculate on. I know what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see Tyrod come back and play and like to see the Bills kind of muddle through, knowing his Tyrod's limitations and getting the defense playing better, getting the running game back, see what you get out of these final six games. That's what I'd like to happen.
Right.
But as far as predictions, I think I'm out of the prediction business.
My whole thing is just truly dividing that locker room if you decide to go back with Nate Peterman, because it's not even just, you know, Tyrod and his play on the field. You're talking about a locker room full of guys that voted him as a captain, guys that really revere him, guys that, you know, look to him as a leader on that team.
They respect his work ethic.
Right.
You know
and you benched one of our captains, you know, and now look how it played out. One half, I understand it's one half, and you can't evaluate a kid off of one half in his first game as a starter, but you benched our captain, and he threw the backup through five interceptions. And now you come back and say you want to put him back in the game and you want us to go out there and actually make plays and play hard and all of that stuff and feel like, you know, this kid gives us the best opportunity to win games. It's tough to do. It's just tough for him to sell that.
But you know what a head coach who's in charge and wants to change the culture would say to that? Yes, you're right. I do want you to do that.
Yeah.
Well, if you can't do that, then we'll find somebody who can.
Yeah.
Right.
And he might be that guy.
I think he might be. I think he might be that guy. He very well might be that guy. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty convinced he is that guy. But I'm telling you guys, there is a bigger problem here, and it's their defense has to get fixed. And it's a defense that has been living and dying by the turnover, and it still hasn't changed. The problem now is they can't get turnovers.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about one turnover in the last three games, and I think it's a byproduct of the pass rush disappearing. We're talking about two sacks in the last three games. Right. Two sacks in the last three games. And I know it's not all about sacks, but it's an indication as to the lack of pressure they're generating against opposing quarterbacks. And if you can't affect the quarterback, which Coach talks about a lot, and you can't stop the run, and you're giving up big plays, I mean, I think this team is going to be near the bottom three of the league in terms of plays given up of 10-plus yards. They haven't given up a lot of 50-yard plays, not a lot of 20-plus yard plays, but those 10-plus yard plays, you give up a ton of those, you're never getting off the field.
Yeah.
And if you can't hand the opponent negative plays via the sack or tackles for loss, you're not getting off the field. And now time of possession becomes an issue. Your offense, which is already struggling to score points, now has fewer possessions per game. It just it turns into a giant snowball rolling downhill that you just can't stop. They've got to fix the defense fast, or it doesn't matter who you have at quarterback. It's not going to make a difference.
Exactly. It's not going to make a difference. It wasn't making a difference when Tyrod was in there before. But, you know, you do get to a certain point as a player. Like you've heard players say, and even the guys that have come up from Carolina, you know, they felt like they had something. When they first went on that run down in Carolina, the first year they might have won the division or something. Like they felt like, you know, we got something going here. You know you have enough talent on the team. Like, what's the big difference in this defense? You don't even see guys flying to the ball. At least in the beginning of the season, they were flying to the ball. You've seen gang tackles, a bunch of guys in there. Now you're just seeing one-on-one tackles. You know, you don't see guys flying around like they were. So where has that gone? You know, I mean,
well, that's
you
the physical ask mindset that I'm talking about.
Exactly. So where has that gone? Are you at a certain point where guys are saying to themselves, do we have what it takes to win this? I mean, these are questions that you have to ask yourself, because these are questions that these are things that go through players' minds.
After you've given up 135 points in three games, the highest three-game stretch in the history of this franchise, it's impossible for doubt not to creep in. Again, we're talking human nature here, guys.
Yep.
You get it rolled up on you for three straight weeks. You're sitting there going, what the heck is wrong? What's going on? What happened?
Yeah. Hey, Chris, before we let you go, Donald and I were bemoaning the fact about the injuries at wide receiver. Jordan Matthews did not play yesterday. McDermott said that Kelvin Benjamin, he called it good news, no ligament damage.
Right, but that is good news.
We could be looking at the Bills right back to where they were like a month ago at the receiver spot for the next week or two, depending on how serious Kelvin Benjamin
is. I mean, I was encouraged that Charles Clay played a little bit more this week than he did last week, so that was an encouraging sign. Hopefully, you know, you sit Matthews this week because he wasn't quite ready and you didn't want him to have a setback playing in the intensity of a game, and he's good to go this week. He's not a guy that likes missing a lot of time. I mean, go back to his thumb injury. Guy missed one game after having thumb surgery, and he's a receiver. So hopefully, you know, he's good to go this week. You know, but beyond that, yeah, I mean, Benjamin may need a week, and, you know, you need a win. You need a win bad.
Sure.
So, I mean, they are going against the 29th-ranked run defense. And the Chiefs, oh, by the way, are a reeling team themselves.
Right.
They started the season 5-0. They've lost four of their last five games.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you would hope – you're getting them at the right time, but they are in their building, and that is a different place to play. It is a different place to play. It's got its own mystique to it,
yes.
No matter what kind of Chiefs team you're playing.
What's coming up on the website, BuffaloBills.com?
Got quick hits, which is just going to kind of take three quick high points from Coach's press conference. So we'll have that up in case you missed the press conference in its entirety. We'll break it down for you, kind of the drive-through version of that. And we'll take a look at LeSean McCoy, kind of a lone bright spot yesterday, where he's at, the season he's having, despite some of the struggles the last 3 weeks.
All right, Chris Brown, thank you, Bills Insider. Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com. Donald and I back with more. Yes, we'll take more of your phone calls when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Flying along here, Donald, as tough as, you know, you might think it'd be after a game like yesterday. Don't you feel that way?
Quarterback talk will do. Make the show fly by.
Quarterback talk.
Nonstop.
You know, instead of like a Christmas music radio station, somebody in Buffalo, if they were smart, would do a quarterback talk radio station. All quarterback talk all the time. Tyrod versus Peterman. All the time, 24-7.
Yeah.
That would be a killer radio station.
Until And you could do that until the Bills find their franchise quarterback.
If you would have done that for 17 years, you would own the market.
I'm telling you, you'd be killing it. Right
quarterback
now.
Talk. WKB radio. Or WQB radio. Quarterback talk.
WQB radio. Yeah. Right?
You could have done that.
You could have owned the market.
We're gonna, Rick Dennison, speaking of that, the Bills OC, offense coordinator. We're going to pick up his news conference in about 2 or 3 minutes here. Tom calling from Rochester. Hello, Tom.
Hi, guys. I'm going to give what's probably an unpopular opinion here, but I think I'm pretty convinced of it. I've done this. If I took over the Bills and I was coaching the Bills and I was McDermott, I would have this 5-year plan. I wouldn't think that I could win this Super Bowl for probably 5 years. And all I'd want to do is develop along the way towards that end. And so you have to make unpopular decisions like benching Tyrod because you see that he's not the guy that's going to take you to the promised land. And you need to find yourself a Jim Kelly. And so you go ahead and you try Peterman, and sure, he failed, right? And maybe even you try him again and you figure out, okay, it's not Peterman. But at least you've learned now, and you're trying to develop. If you're in this constant win-now, handiwork, patchwork thing, you end up with 17-9-7 or 7-9 seasons in a row. You have to commit. You have to commit to being bad and developing teams. And that those are unpopular things. People don't want that, but that's what it takes. You have to go through that learning curve. You have to.
Tom, and all that being said, which way do you think the Bills and McDermott are playing it right now?
Well, I think that they took McDermott out so as not. I'm sorry, they took out Peterman so as not to wreck him forever. But I think McDermott himself is playing the long game. I think he's playing the right game. I admired his decision to take Tyrod out. I never thought Tyrod was worse than Peterman, but I knew he wasn't Kelly. And so now they've learned. He's learned at least a little, and he's going to learn more about Peterman. And I think this gives them a full understanding of how they need to spend their draft picks next year, because I'm thinking I got 5 years to make this thing turn around. So I'm not thinking about this year or next year. I'm thinking, okay, 5 years. So I think McDermott is doing the right long play. I like his process, frankly.
Okay. That's people feel that way. I get that. You have to acknowledge, Tom, it's a difficult sell to a fan base that hasn't had a whiff of the playoffs in 17 years, right?
I 100% acknowledge that. And that's why I said it's going to be an unpopular one. People don't agree with it, and people aren't going to like it. But unfortunately, if you want to build a winner, you have to make unpopular decisions, and it's complex because you're an owner trying to sell tickets, and right? You got Russ Brandon trying to market this team, make people like it, but if you make them competitive right away, you're basically giving away your future. At least that's my opinion, and I've done it. I've developed enough teams, of course not at the professional league level. I'm not suggesting that, but you got to go through the hard.
All right, I want to get Donald Wayne in on this, and we don't want
to. I'll just say this. Yeah. I know we got to go back to a break. I'll say this. I think if that's the case, just be transparent with the players. You know, because if you have this open door policy and you're talking to the leadership council, just be transparent with the players so that they know what they're in store for. You know, don't say he gives us the best chance to get to the playoffs this year. Just be upfront with the players. And then move forward from there. At least they know, and they can go out there and play hard and figure out if this kid is the kid for the future or not.
And while I understand Tom from Rochester's argument and know that many people feel that way, it shouldn't and it doesn't take 5 years to build a winner in the NFL.
No, it can happen in a year.
You get a franchise quarterback, that accelerates the process, and all you have to do is look at the Rams. But it can happen. It can happen.
It can definitely happen.
In a much shorter time frame than that.
Now, what you want to, if once again, if you're Coach McDermott and that's your thought process, once again, be transparent with the players and see how they react, right? Because if you're trying to build a winner, you need to create cap space. You need to do all of that stuff at the same time. And so let's see if so-and-so goes out here and plays. If you're not playing now that I told you this is what the deal is, you're out of here next year. You're not the right guy for us next year. We can go ahead and create some cap space by letting you go because we're trying to build a team and we need to get talent here. You have to get talent on your team. You got to have some good character, but you got to get talent. So if you don't want to, now that you know what the deal is, you don't want to come out here and play every single Sunday, you're not giving it 110%, you got to go. And we'll just create some more space so that we can draft guys and so that we can bring key guys in via free agency.
We're going to take a break here. When we return, we may get a little bit of Leslie Frazier, the Bills' defensive coordinator, in his session with the media at the podium. Apparently, he's going to go before Rick Dennison, but we'll see what we get when we come back. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We are back. John Murphy, Donald Jones on a show that has just flown along. And we heard from Sean McDermott. We heard from Chris Brown. Got a good show on paper for tomorrow. Steve Tasker will join us in studio at 1 o'clock. And our regular visit with Trey Wingo from ESPN, from the NFL live show on ESPN. I think this might be Trey's last appearance on our show.
Is it?
He starts his big show next Monday, the 27th, a week from today, with Golic and Wingo on ESPN. So I think the timing's going to preclude him being with us.
Last week they had the whole Fade to Black episode of Mike and Mike, you know, where they shut the light. They had both the families come out, and then they shut the lights off.
Yeah.
It reminded me of the last episode of Fresh Prince.
Oh, I missed that one.
Did you?
Was that good?
Well, you know, they lived in this house forever, and then the last episode, the house was empty, and Will Smith standing there, he's looking, about to cry.
Little Donnie Jones with a tear running down
his cheek. I'm telling you. It was
Rick Dennison, Bills offensive coordinator, is at the podium. Let's listen in as he addresses the Buffalo media today.
Just thought I'd try a different perspective. I made that just in our when we were watching film the previous game on Monday. We talked as a staff. Both David and Kelly wanted to be on the field to work with those. Thought about it, thought I'd get a different perspective and went up.
As the offensive coordinator devising game plans, how does the uncertainty around the quarterback position affect your week right now?
Usually we spend a lot of time seeing what our team does well against their defense. So certainly the quarterback position is a part of it, but schematically it's, trying to get our guys in the right position, and one of them is a quarterback, so we're just devising, you know, take a look at Kansas City, good football team. Obviously, I'm familiar with them from my time in Denver over the years. I know what they can do and what they can't do. So we're looking at what they do defensively, what they've done over the past, you know, this year they changed just a hair, and then see how we fit in offensively. So I think it incorporates both skill sets.
When making the switch to quarterbacks last week, and how much of a challenge is it for the offensive line to adapt to a scrambling kind of guy in Tyrod and versus Nathan Peterman, and how much of that play into how much pressure he got?
I don't think it's that big a deal. I think, certainly they do things a little bit different in the pocket, but as an offensive lineman, they're having coached the position, they're focused on their assignment and the guy they're trying to block, right? So I think, you know, we try to do everything, team-wise, as far as, each position, so that we're interchangeable, because you never know, right? Somebody can go down and you're starting with a different guy anyway. So we try to make them as interchangeable as possible.
What then do you pin the pressure that they're able to apply on me?
I got two really good football players on the edge. So we didn't handle that, and certainly there's a few things that we need to focus on and get better at, and that's what we're evaluating now.
Rick, how much have you advised Sean with the decision he has to make at quarterback specifically?
I haven't talked to him yet today. We talked on the plane last night. He made the decision last week, and I support everything that he's ever tried to do. Playoff caliber on down, hiring people. So I'm supporting Sean.
What did you see or what maybe went wrong for Nathan in that series?
We made some bad decisions with the football, right? And some of those were under duress. And that's experience. You know, sometimes you have to take a sack. You can't put the ball at risk. So I think he'll learn from that process. He's a very intelligent guy. Went through the game plan at ease the night before. He understood where the ball was supposed to go, what was supposed to happen. So he'll learn from this.
How ready, taking yourself back, I guess, to maybe Saturday night or Friday, how ready did you feel like he was?
Well, I always think that we do a good job of preparing our guys as far as information and knowledge and where the ball's supposed to go and formations. He was as ready as you're going to be, but it's seeing it, fast paced, and certainly with guys running down at you is a little bit different story.
You talk about what he had learned, things that he had learned from the other day. Is the best way to continue learning to keep playing, or are those things that you can correct while you're sitting out watching, or what is the best way?
I'm not sure. So, I think Nathan will learn no matter what. So I think he'll be in good shape. I think he's got a bright future. I really do.
Do you worry about the potential damage a half like that could have done to him?
I think he's a mentally tough young man too. I mean, he's had to switch schools and in college. He did a lot of different things. So I think most people in our industry have some bad things happen to them, and sometimes you get a kick around a couple times and you get better at it. So I have faith that Nathan will do a good job, as he progresses.
Rick Dennison, offensive coordinator, hasn't talked with Sean McDermott yet today about the quarterback decision and talked to him last night on the plane. So stay tuned.
We'll have news. Some evaluations to do.
Yes. I don't mind that at all, as a matter of fact. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush. Our producer is Jay Harris. We will be back tomorrow at 12 noon. Steve Tasker on the show with us tomorrow. Trey Wingo from ESPN's NFL Live on the show with us tomorrow. Hope to see you as well with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.